And welcome to Dark Guidance. I'm Chris.
I'm Brian.
I'm Affy.
Alrighty, and today we are going for a bit of a blast in the past. Sorry we haven't been online for a bit. We had the Oceanic Team Championship recently, which I ran and these two guys played in.
Yeah!
And it was a good bit of fun, and then the hangover after that was less fun, but still quite, you know, enjoyable in its own capacity. Briefly speaking, because I don't really want to talk about that much, because mostly I didn't actually record almost any of the games played, like who played against who, on account of I just wanted team wins, but Affy, you were on the winning team.
I was.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Brian, you were on the ACT team, and you guys did very well, actually.
Yeah, surprisingly.
Surprisingly.
I went 6-1.
Yeah, because...
I was happy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we'll one day find you a secondary list to cover your freaking Zal 2 addiction. That actually pairs nicely.
Maybe.
So instead, because Affy's taken a brief time to be with us on his, like, busy schedule otherwise, and we haven't really had the chance to, we're going to talk about mercenaries. Specifically because we've had a bunch of CIDs where people have complained about, oh, power creep, and oh, it just makes all the models like crazy pants and all broken as balls. And when you think about it, that's sort of what's happened with, like, how Circle has gone and how Menoth has sort of gone on account of their freaking initiates, and similarly with the Clockatris. But mercenaries have had two CIDs in a row and a bunch of other random updates since the last time we did a Merc cast.
And all that we have, as your resident osteomopologist will inform you, is a series of mercenary nerfs and sideways lateral movements. No strong buffs at all. This is the official news, not fake news.
I'm assuming this is actually the official official line, the party line, as it were.
Propaganda at its best.
As a side note, everyone, one of the reasons I brought up the OTC and, you know, Affy's busy schedule is because Affy has a jersey that actually just says on the back, osteomopologist.
Only 6 rulers at the event.
Uh-huh.
All in one list.
How did you go anyway?
Yeah, pretty well.
Yeah, that's what I thought. All right, so with that in mind, we're doing a Merccast this episode. And
Hooray.
We're doing the Merccast 2.0, the Merckening, or some other catchy tagline.
Merc 2 update.
Yep. Well, as a result of that, we might as well just go in. So in this one, because Mercs are effectively so many different factions rolled into each other due to the way their themes work, we're just going to actually talk about them through their themes, and then we'll roll in with how the various castes, which are more or less tied to those themes, but not always, have actually changed. So we're just going to get the two quick ones out of the way, because these ones either haven't really changed at all or have barely changed. The first one's Operating Theater. It's still Cephalix. Thexus is still good.
I think the big takeaway here is, and we're going to get to Fiorina later in the cast, but Fiorina being an offensive spell displacement caster, she kind of steps on the toes of Thexus.
And Fiorina is kind of in a better list on account of being in irregulars and other lists that are kind of like irregulars.
Yeah, and like principally, her warjacks aren't 10-17, and it turns out 10-17 is not a great stat line for
her. She also has guns.
Yeah, guns, why not?
Guns are nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty good description for that, and you can also play Siphon if you have...
If you're...
Jan played Siphon!
If you have an allergy to Ostrom, then you're permitted to play Bad Ostrom, also known as Siphon.
Yeah. We played Siphon. Siphon was on Team Bin Chicken, or ACT, or whatever team we were.
Yeah. Did he actually drop Siphon? I wasn't 100% sure.
I don't think so.
I think he deliberately wrote the most terrible list he could, so that people would be distracted from the fact he was playing, I'm pretty sure, Fiona.
Gordon. I'm pretty sure we had two one-listers in that event.
Yeah, and... Oh, that's right, because Mitch was playing Fiona, because I had to fucking follow up with... For reference sake, one of the reasons I kind of wanted to do this cast is because I had to go through a lot of pain and suffering. As I was TOing the event, the privateer update was meant to drop on the Monday before the event. The event was, by the way, on a Saturday. It instead dropped...
On the Saturday. I literally rocked up to the event going, hey guys, did your thing update? Because I had two or three Merc players on my team. And I was like, hey guys, did all your shit get fixed?
We're not letting this slip, by the way. You rocked up the event late. You live closest to the venue, which is in central Sydney, and you rocked up late. Even Frawley managed to make it on time.
My alarm did not go off.
You're a freaking casual loser. Anyway, as of such, you don't remember your round one that well on account of your round one was already beginning by the time
I started 10 minutes down and I won that game. Thank you very much.
Fair enough. All right. Anyway, Operating Theater hasn't really changed much. Thexus, probably still playable, still decent, but has to compete now directly with Fiona as opposed to sideways with Fiona as the second one we don't think has changed much is actually Hammer Strike, even though it explicitly got a new model, and that model is the Steelhead Artillerist Dude Man.
So it's fantastic to make a dwarf artillery piece Rat 6 natively. That's excellent. The problem is the way that Theme Force operates is it's got a pretty stock standard list of 2 Siege Crawlers, double Forge Guard, 30 Warjack points on whatever you like, and then 2 solos. And you need solos to sit on flags. And if one of your solos is going to be a support model, then once that Bokker dies, what's going to sit on your flag? So I don't think the lists are going to change at all, courtesy of Scenario, until the Scenario pack changed a little bit. So I got a slight buff, notionally. I don't think it'll even necessarily be included in those seat lists.
That's funny, actually, because that actually brings me to
the new scenarios we've seen. Do they change it or make it worse?
The new scenarios, to my understanding, there's less, like... There's
more spread.
There's much more spread. They are less alive, is what I was going to say. Like, you don't really have Mirage 2.0, because the replacement of Mirage... doesn't have 3 flags.
There's still spread the net, though.
There's a scenario with 3 flags.
Yeah, but that one is, like, the zones are easier to control. I mean...
I almost won in one turn on that scenario, okay, thank
fair
you.
Enough. Fair enough.
It was close.
I was going to say I found it not as bad, but then again, I also don't think I was playing to a true abuser of that scenario, like Harvey, for instance, or some other turd.
Sure.
Who could really... who just loved Incursion back as it was. This is a side note, reminds me of someone who was actually updating the Steelhead, and while she's not a warcaster, she effectively acts like one in a lot of ways. Alexia, too. Speaking of which, I think that's probably a good segue into the first of the themes that actually got updated, which we'll talk about in depth, because I feel it's a good place to start on, and that is the Steelhead CID and the Steelhead Theme Force, which is called Soldiers of Fortune.
So there are a few things that happened in this. One, there were a bunch of new Steelhead releases that we'll go through first. Then there were some changes to models such as Alexia 2, who's quite the powerhouse, and also, incidentally, broke the cast in our first attempt at doing this.
Correct, actually.
So this is take 2 of going through Steelhead theme. Yes. We're going to smash through.
We're going to smash
through. Post-haste, because we just had this conversation about 7 to 10 minutes ago.
Correct.
So, principally, here are the things that happen in Steelhead. You get 3 artillery pieces, one of which is mostly irrelevant, which is the big mortar one, right? So instead we're going to talk about mostly the cannon and the volley gun.
The cannon is basically a winning guard rocket, except it has 2 more power and knocks down on a hit.
And 2 more range as well.
And 2 more range.
The volley gun itself has covering fire at range 12, power 12. It has D3 plus 1 shots. And all these models get to be buffed by the Steelhead solos. So the first gunner. Of the solos, the gunner, who we briefly covered but didn't go into any detail with the Hammer Strike theme force, gives vet leader to all the artillery in his command range. He can desperate pace them for an additional 2 inches of threat, and he can give them siege weapons so they become weapon masters against huge bases. Obviously, that stacks quite nicely with a D3 plus 1 shot because you're getting bonus dice between 2 to 4. If you throw it on the cannon, you're just getting the 1 additional dice out of the equation.
Realistically, the cannon doesn't need it as much. Half the time, the cannon doesn't want to shoot huge bases. It wants to shoot, like, value targets that you can knock down. You can't knock down a huge base.
Yep, correct. Or it wants to throw some additional fire to finish off a huge base.
Yep.
What the entirety of this package does is... Well, those guys in particular. It lets you shoot Wraith Engines off the table. It lets you, in addition to some other threats, such as Alexia Thrall Warriors, that we'll get to in a bit, maybe some Steelhead Cav, maybe a Rosciante or whatever, lets you remove Colossals from the table. And in our huge base heavy meta that we appear to exist in right now, these models appear to be quite attractive. And they are. The downside is, at 6 points a pop, and 13-13, 1 wound, 2 shield guards. They are quite expensive and quite fragile.
The shield guards in this case are referring to the other crew members, who, by the way, also don't have weapons, so which I know doesn't really seem like that big a deal, but a lot of the better gun crews actually have their gun... Like, the Dragon's Breath rocket, for instance, all of the crew members have rifles.
Look, it's important to remember that mercenaries is a weak theme force, weak faction, sorry, and none of our artillery pieces have such functionality.
Of course.
At least the dwarf one doesn't. I don't even know what the deck gun does other than be free and cheap and rebo free.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't either. Nor does the Commodore cannon, which is, agreed, another weak.
No propaganda on this podcast, only truth.
We have just skipped through the two of the solos, one of which was sort of spoiled ahead of time, the other which is actually brand new. The first is the Arcanist, who allows you to shoot right then off the table. He removes clouds, he gives you magic weapons, and he has bombshell for some reason. He also has Empower.
That's right.
But the empower kind of actually getting into a thing with the way they've done these merc themes is that all of the factions that aren't irregulars are getting access to Empower, and irregulars, funnily enough, is getting access to Empower, but it's on a character guy, who we'll get into when we get to irregulars.
Much excitement.
And then we have the Steelhead Ironhead, which is the most derpily named model, but as Brian went into on a 1 minute long description of working, that Ironhead is actually the name of a job type, and he's a mechanic.
Yeah, it's an industrial man of war.
Yes, unfortunately, because he's an industrial man of war, he has to abide by certain OH&S codes, and therefore is only allowed to crane forward, which is his primary job, by the way, craning forward mercenary models. Meaning that for everyone listening at home who dreams of having Butcher being gracefully lifted an extra 2 inches forward so he can get boundless charge and charge forward and impending doom and energize and do all of his wonderful tricks, sadly, due to OH&S, he cannot.
I claim racism.
He was racist.
Racist against butchers.
Yes, it's very sad.
So far, everything we've described is really good.
One of the other things, too, about the Steelhead theme, and one of its, quote, problems, is that it is incredibly generous with free cards. Its free card problem is that you can pick any solo, and your cannons and whatnot are competing directly with Alexia 2, Iris 1, and Stannis Brocker.
So you're rarely getting your artillery pieces for free. Maybe you're getting one of them for free.
Yeah.
It's quite rare that you'll ever write a list where you're getting multiple for free. The additional bonuses in the theme force are a rock wall template and
mark target
on solos, and lastly bulldoze on your steelhead cav model. So yeah. Stannis plus a steelhead cav, not Alexia 2 herself. So all those benefits are pretty good. The rock wall itself is sometimes a little awkward in terms of where you place it, because you can't end your movement from a slipstream, from like the TK effect from the Ironhead, on top of the rock wall.
Yes.
And so if you want to be behind the rock wall with your artillery pieces to increase their defensive value so your game plan doesn't just die to a couple of power 12s, all of a sudden you can't get the maximum threat extension from the Ironhead. So it's a little awkward there, but like with enough practice on the table, you can sort of figure out where you want to place your rock wall.
Can you always TK a small base behind the rock wall? Sorry, forward with the slipstream effect?
I honestly couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
I think you can, but even at
I've been putting them to the side.
Yeah, so that should be fine. I was just thinking, like, one of the effects, obviously, of the Ironhead is that it does increase any threat range. That includes guys like, say, Gaston,
or
Fiona, or Gorton, or whoever,
yeah,
who might appreciate a rock wall to hide behind, because they tend to go down low.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the casters that I've found that work best in this theme force are casters that let you obtain multiple activations from your cannons and from your volley guns. And there aren't too many casters like that in mercenaries. Initially, I was testing some Durgan just to see like what happens if you have infinite numbers on artillery pieces. And it turns out things die really quickly.
Yes.
The flip side is you've got no way to protect few things that are killing your opponent. So if your opponent can reach out and touch your artillery pieces, like, your game's over because you don't have a game plan anymore. And even if you kill a bunch of their things, if they reach out and kill your artillery pieces, can you kill the rest of their army? Probably not.
Yeah, you're going to have problems.
So you're really leaning heavily in on your capacity to assassinate your opponent's caster really quickly, because you can't usually win an attrition battle. Casters like Damiano are perfect in this theme force because he has Repo 5. And Repo 5 on artillery pieces means that you can walk forward, like, what, 8 inches? Up to 8 inches with a volley gun.
Yes.
Put down a covering fire in a really rude location. Walk back 5 inches. That's pretty hot.
Or just walk up and shoot someone and then walk away. But let's be honest, right? He has another thing on here which is also excellent on freaking, like, guys, which is fucking Money Shot.
Yeah, so when I first was theorizing Damiano, all I could think about was Money Shot and how I'm just going to kill everything with all the cannons and all the volley guns with Money Shot, and, like, everything's boosted, and, like, I've got marked target and nothing's possibly going to live. And then the first time I activated and a story piece. I'm like, if I walk forward with body shot, I'm going to kill the fuck out of whatever I'm targeting. But unfortunately, my story piece will definitely die the next turn.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like Choir with Judicator, except definitely not Choir with Judicator. Insofar as,
I mean, you will kill a Judicator with money shot if you manage to shoot it with your two volley guns that now have magic weapons.
Yeah, ignoring the infinite shield guards. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you just hope you're playing against Exemplars.
I mean, they still have the infinite shield guards.
It's always infinite shield guards.
Sure.
We won't talk about the vicious guys.
Insofar as if you want to go with Choir and Adjudicator, you almost always have to go the defensive options, and then you go for the damage buff on the turn where you're going to kill the last thing that can kill the Adjudicator. Yeah. And it's pretty similar with Money Shot. You're going to be using Repo 5 from Damiano in order to consistently grind out, unless you're in a position where you're able, through Money Shot, to kill the last major threat your opponent has in their list, and therefore roll over the top of their list with everything else you have.
Yeah. It's also, there are some battle engines that, to be perfectly blunt, are worth grinding, like just sacrificing your artillery to get off the table. Tridents in a lot of cases, and the Supreme Guardian, if you can just get that piece
this off, is biased.
Off the table.
Absolutely. And like that flex that Damiano brings in both increasing the damage output of those pieces and also keeping them alive is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Furthermore, like, you're already taking at least an Iron Head just to threaten, increase your threat projection a little bit, and that stacks really nicely with Rota War.
Yes.
So now you have Nomad, say, or a Toro, or a Rociante, or whatever, going 15 inches, which is reasonably tasty. Like, that's a real threat range.
That's a real threat range.
I mentioned Rociante a few times. I think he's actually...
Well, here's what we were going with.
Which I never thought I'd say about a 1018.
I agree, yeah. Well, what I was going to say is that...
1018.
So he went down from 18 to 16 points. His AOE went up from a 3 to a 4. He gained powerful shot.
That's a good roll.
Really good. Right? He's already like mat 7, power strength 18.
He also can just be taken in Steelhead theme.
1018 is...
It's pretty bad. But the thing is, I don't think you're ever shooting at him. Because... he's just far enough back. Because he can walk forward, shoot something, rotable back 3 inches, and he shoots 14 inches. So I don't think he ever really gets... I don't think that armor 18 ever matters because your opponent has other models that are actually...
It doesn't matter until it does.
So one other aspect that's changed with this theme force, which we talked about in our first version of the cast and then, you know, haven't brought up so far, all the human jacks have been... the Nomad chassis got changed in this. To my knowledge, basically the big one was that the Nomad itself gained a point and then gained powerful charge, which caused everyone to, like...
It has rules!
Freak out. Well, it's more that it caused everyone to just, like, freak out and complain that their Nomads were now unplayable and then immediately try and fire sale them. Don't necessarily agree.
Yeah, so
As someone who has had the Juggernaut unjustly increased in price, I can sort of...
It didn't even get extra rules.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah. So the reason... Okay, so in our defense as mercenary players, you're both correct. We might have flipped some quantity of table when the Nomad was first egregiously nerfed from 11 points to 12 points, you know, a 9% increase in points cost, not insignificant by anyone's stretch of imagination, without any increase to its rule set. In its initial CID, this is where it was at which point in time you looked at a Toro and you looked at a Nomad and you said to yourself, there's no way in the world I'm ever taking a Nomad, let's burn them all. Thankfully, CID developed a little bit, it gained powerful attack, which in mercenaries... Which in mercenaries is reasonably relevant because frequently you have like these trash warjacks that are now incredibly expensive at 12 points that you don't actually really give focus to. Rather, you spend a focus to charge something.
Yeah.
And so being mat 8 on that charge is actually quite excellent. And as such, I don't feel bad including a Nomad over
reference sake, a Nomad hits as hard as a Spriggan.
Like, it's a Spriggan, though.
It is literally a Spriggan.
I don't know if
a Spriggan is pretty damn playable in terms of, like...
A Spriggan is, like, 6 more points.
It has rules, though. The Nomad doesn't really have rules.
I mean, it was 6
It's rules light. It's definitely rules light.
Okay. Well,
it's a skim milk of rules.
I can definitely... It, you know what?
Still better than it was Mark 2, it's still... At least it has rules now.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's evolving. It's learning.
The Mule, I at some point, they decided to change the Mule to be actually playable. To put it this way, as someone who's played Vindicators in the past, actually quite has a fondness for that jack.
I only realised...
Range 10 is garbage. Range 12 is very playable.
I only realised they went up to range 12 on the night before OTC. when I was trying to mock all these Canberrans for having infinite mules. And then I realized that they pointed out the actual threat range of their creep devs. Like, I might have to change some of my grids here.
It gets better. Snap
snipe with this.
There is a reason you can
You can do a lot of things. Like, the steel head, the iron head being able to crane them is also good, because you can crane, then aim, and
forward,
then you can
backward.
Shoot. And then you can shoot 16 with no... Damiano here can just road to war them forward. They aim. I mean, I've played...
Deadeye.
Run and gun.
There's just a lot of things you can do.
And again, you can stack snipe with this effect as well.
Yeah.
So their threat range is really is quite high. And when you threat, like, a notional infinite distance...
When you have a rule just like crit dev as well, which is just...
10-18 doesn't matter that much if your opponent can't touch you. And if you take just one mule with Eilish, that's probably the most... efficient crit dev package you can have in the game, because it's like probably a free solo, although it is taken up a free solo slot somewhere, and you get a reroll on the crit dev.
Yeah,
not relevant, however, to the themes we're currently in, because Eilish isn't an option there.
Yes,
but it's sort of
more than a Vlad 2 with Eilish and a Conquest.
Or really a Colden Lord, but...
Sure, fine. Well, if we're going to add a caster in there, you just add Damiano. And,
or Ashlyn.
Ashlyn, yes.
So it's fine, right?
You're
yes.
right.
I mean, really, ignoring casters just as a...
I think the Rover went down one point. I can't remember.
Rover went down
that model point. Doesn't exist.
It's not too bad.
It's okay.
Its main problem in this theme is that you... one of the issues with Steelheads to me is that Steelheads don't really have any damage increases.
Yeah, there's just Gorman. Oh, thank you for reminding me. Yeah, that's the other problem with Steelheads, is you only have Gorman as damage increase. Yeah. And so when I was going through all the different casters that can defend...
Hutcher?
Sorry?
No.
Hutcher?
No, there's no Hutcher. It's just Gorman.
It's Gorman and Annie.
Anastasia?
As your ambushing option, not as your damage buff. When I was going through the list of all possible war casters that are legal in a theme force, sorry, the humans...
Are all casters legal for this one?
Humans and dwarves, not the Thexus ones, I apologize.
Yeah, sure.
The only warcaster that has a damage buff and a way to protect the artillery is Damiano. That's it.
Yeah.
Right, that's literally it. So I think it's a theme force that works really well with Damiano. It doesn't actually work, from my opinion, with any of the other casters, because either you're able to fix all of the damage output issues that the list has, but not be able to protect the artillery pieces. Alternatively, you can protect the artillery pieces, but you can't fix the damage output of the list. So that was kind of quite frustrating for me, because sure, it makes Damiano great, but Damiano was already great in two other theme forces. He didn't really need to be great again in a third theme force, but sure, whatever, I'll take it. One of the nice things you can do with Damiano in that list is have... kind of like the Crystal Guard package of sure-footed, tuft, recurring Steelhead Halberds who just sort of walk up the table and then you just charge cav through them, killing whatever comes into them. And that package, backed up with Alexia 2, those models die, they recur back, they turn into three warriors, we'll just win a flank.
Yes.
It'll 100% just win that flank over an extended time. I don't really care what my opponent's doing, I'm going to win that flank eventually. And then the artillery pieces are very effective at killing whatever you want, really, over... given number of turns. I have found the list can struggle on the off flank, so the flank where Alexia 2 and your buffs models aren't. And
or if they can counter your buffs, like they have purification or whatever, that always is annoying. Or,
yes. That's a Damiano problem forever, though, because he's so reliant on his upkeeps.
Okay, so two things first. One is you've written down Rahana, who I've usually just called Rihanna, because I can't remember.
Yeah, so
Rahera? That's her name, yeah.
Rahera is the one caveat here. So she has a way to protect the artillery pieces, namely through, what's it called? Rough Seas?
Rough Seas.
Minus three range.
It's a windstorm, except it works on your guys.
And she has excellent stats. So she gets... And Pathfinder.
She also has a feat, which... Okay.
Damage.
So
yeah.
She gets to sit behind the rock wall and not care about it, because she has Pathfinder.
Yes.
Okay?
And sprint.
And sprint and acrobatics, which means she can stand fairly far forward behind a rock wall. Maybe you take a rover in that list. I have been, just with additional shield guard in case I've got some kind of momentum-like effect that you need to protect Rahera from.
Mm-hmm.
And she's... kind of like the vanguard of the list in the early turns. That is, far forward as possible, bravely extended the rough seas out to get as many models as she can.
She's like the prow of the ship with the wooden statue of the lady.
Yep.
She's the wooden lady.
That's precisely that. And now, here's where it all comes a little bit awkward, because this model isn't released yet, and we have two E3 versions.
One of which has a good feat, and the other has a...
Ossian feat.
Ossian feat. It was pretty fucking ridiculous.
So, the good feat goes as follows. She exists in a location, somewhere on the table. Doesn't really matter where, it's going to be relevant, right?
All of your models get to attack enemy models in that control range.
Correct. So if you have two cannons and Iris 1, turns out that no warcaster wants to be hit by Iris 1 or knockdown effect. The knockdown effect starts at Rat 5, goes to Rat 6 from old mate, Dwarfy Bro, right? Goes to Rat 8 from Mark Target, not including an 8. So let's just call it a Rat 8. And Iris 1 is Rat 11 with Mark Target. Now, no one wants to be hit by an Iris 1 shot or a knockdown shot, and you've got, with her feet, six of them.
So you got to be men off to survive this.
I mean, four shield guards is probably enough. It might not be.
So
it's probably enough.
Grimkin, men off.
No, Grimkin don't have shield guards.
Krabbits are fucking shield guards.
Yeah, but there's only like two in the list.
Two or three.
It's not enough, right? Yeah. You need four.
Especially because
that number can easily increase if this becomes a list.
It can. Absolutely, it can, right? But, so the list that I'm seeing these days, if I see four shield guards, most of the time, that's really at the upper end.
Three.
Frequently, there's like zero to one, right?
Yeah.
And if you're taking two as your, I'm going to deal with Lord of the Feast tech, that's not enough to deal with this W3. Because what happens is, you shoot your caster at the caster a bunch, and let's say you get...
You actually don't even need to. You can half the time just shoot your cannons at the shield guards and then follow up with Iris 1.
However you want to play it, right?
Yeah.
Good odds, they're either knocked down, or they've lost all their focus of fury, or quite probably both, right? But it's not done there. Because what you get to do is run all of your cav models forward, and then they make random power 12s. Sanus runs forward, right? And this obviously all before Rahera feats. Rahera feats in the model, takes another shot. And then you have your Thrall Warriors that you've created from Alexia 1 charge in and finish off the model. Plus maybe get a couple of Rosciante shots, maybe like a Rover shot or the like. And the sum total of all those gunshots is one dead Warcaster.
Unfortunately, it might have been the case that a few people played some amount of CID game
and they actually
to the end of CID and they rushed in. Oh, it was absolutely egregious. They rushed in a weak 3.5 nerf to Rahera to turn her into Ossian. And, like, no one likes Ossian. Ret players don't like to play with Ossian. Sometimes they bring him out as a meta pick. No one likes to play against Ossian. It's an unfair play experience for both parties. Because either you lose to Ossian or you're playing Ossian and you lose. That's all I ever hear about Ossian is either Ret players complaining about him or people who play against him complaining about him.
I will say there is one very big difference between Rahera
so
and
what
Ossian.
Is the change
is that Ossian does not have sprint.
Fair. That's excellent question. The change is that she can now only... Those attacks that you make have to, A, come from models inside of her control area and target models inside of her control area. And she is speed 7, focus 6. So it's now entirely
likely...
If
you don't win, you lose.
Sorry?
So now it's...
Yeah, if you don't win, you lose, right? But, like, previously it was, I'm going to win because I'm going to kill your caster and I don't give a fuck where your caster is on the table, right?
Yeah.
Unless you're, like, behind a forest and then maybe I care, but maybe I don't. But maybe I care, right?
Yes.
Now it's a case of, well, if you're just, like, more than 21 inches from Rahera, you are always safe, right? Because that's TK forward...
23.
TK forward... Advance and feat.
Okay.
Now, the reason why I say that is I assume that no one's going to let me charge a model and then feat.
Right.
Right? I'm assuming that. This is a thing that... Because that's something your opponent can always control. So I'm looking at the 21 as the baseline, and that's quite good. It's not infinite, and I like the infinite. That felt really strong. I don't know if this is good enough, but it's definitely worth talking about, and it's definitely worth testing when she eventually comes out.
Yeah, I mean, one of the aspects...
It's probably fine.
One of the aspects, incidentally, which I actually like with Rahera, side note, she 100% has a damage roll. She's got Manifest fucking Destiny.
Yeah, it doesn't even... Oh, I don't know if it...
But it probably doesn't matter that much in Mercs. Like, in much more relevant, say, Bindustries or...
I thought it was going to be massive.
Didn't she have a damage feat at the beginning?
She did. Oh, no, she had, like...
She's had so many...
She
was rubbish in every iteration over the course of, like, the first 2 weeks of CID, and they pushed out so many red errors.
They were trying so hard to figure out.
And then there was this moment of gold, and maybe it's fake gold, but we'll find out.
Well, if nothing else, right, she can always feat to shoot someone with her hand cannon and then shoot again with her actual hand cannon shot, which, you know, doesn't seem like that much, except that when your entire goal is to feat on your opponent's warcaster and knock them down, iris wand them, and then you double tap them just with Rahera,
yeah,
because it's her activation, she can boost.
Yes.
Then you're probably okay.
Yeah.
Just saying.
And yeah, also, good.
You say
it's
that it's hard, you know, like, opponents probably won't give you the charge, but she does have a native threat of 13 inches.
It's a
and with
distance.
Acrobatics.
It's a reasonable distance, and Pathfinder, I know. I'm not saying she's trash.
She also has
I'm saying
fighter.
That I would have played her in the week 3 version.
Ah, right.
I would have added her as a paired Osram without blinking an eye. And now I have to think about my life choices. And maybe I'll play her and maybe I'll.
All right. Well, allow me to then, in that case, sidetrack a bit from paired Osram, because I don't think we want to dive down the Osram rabbit hole just quite yet. Or who we pair
four
with
nerfs, Osram. Four nerfs, Osram.
Four nerfs, Osram. Very incongruable. I want to talk about Alexia 2 for a while, because Alexia 2 has changed a lot of lists. Now, Alexia 2's main shtick is that she now collects when enemy attacks kill your models, and as well as, like, collecting enemy souls.
Continuous effects as well?
Continuous effects caused by enemy attacks.
It's the only thing that... Yeah, so if you've caused
You
it,
cannot kill your own models
yeah.
specifically to
Which
do
is-
that... Which is good.
So frustrating. Because, like, for most of that CID,
right?
My first turn would be that you still had Cav walk up and punch these halberds in the butt. I get 3 Thrall Warriors. Next turn, I regenerate back the Steelhead
Oh, actually, halberds. You can still get it. It doesn't have to be continuous effect caused by an enemy attack. Any continuous effect
yeah.
will do it. So you can just
It's
run
not
it.
Collateral caused by your attacks from memory.
Yeah, that's what it is. Regardless, right? So she has massively changed a whole bunch of... different matchups because specifically of her ability to be the ultimate fucking scenario bitch. Like, she makes some of the best fucking contesting models in the form of her 3 Thrall Warriors she gets to drop off every turn. And more importantly, unlike Alexia 1, which I'll be, as someone who's played a lot of Alexias, in fact, frankly, it seems like my War Machine goal in life is to just get Alexia and Urusk shipped. It just seems like a thing. But as someone who's
what?
Like, I just play them together all the time because it's just a natural fit, but it just... after so many years... Anyway, I still just miss Battlelust Alexia. That was really just not fair. But good.
No!
Anyway, Alexia 2, because she basically makes, like, with the scenario pack where you really just want good and trash to, like, put on zones and put on flags, she makes some of the best. The fact that she's now very takeable in a lot of themes means that you also get access to Arcane Vortex, which means that there's a lot of lists that now are just way better at countering spells. Like, you have a lot of just, say, random lists which actually had good shooting defense, but had no real capacity to effectively deal with spells. A good one that comes to mind, Kator Armored Core, right?
Mm.
Very, very good list to generally deal with shooting, randomly gets fucked by control. Well, now you have Alexia 2. Alexia 2 can work with very high-value models like medium-based stuff like Man of War quite comfortably. As well as another theme we'll get into which has medium-based models I quite like, which is Efton the D. But we will get into that one later. Regardless, she also affects specifically Signar, and she's quite actually a good addition to Signar, I found. And obviously, as I said, Kator, she's incredibly good in as well into Tharn, because one problem Alexia 1 has into Tharn is that Tharn eat corpses. Meaning Alexia 1 never gets any corpses, because the Tharn are eating them. And it's really shit.
Yeah, but she gets their corpses.
Yeah, but that's a problem when you need Alexia to be your, like, recovery mechanism, and you can't recover because all the Ravagers have eaten your own
I feel
men.
Like the biggest problem there is not the corpse mechanic, it's more that if you're taking Alexia 1, you're spamming a lot of dudes. Right?
Yes, which
and
is not
if you're
what
spamming
you
want a lot of dudes.
Not what you wanted for fun. Whereas Alexia 2 collects souls, works on a smaller quantity of dudes, and also really, like, I did mention Armored Core, and one of the reasons I'm even bringing this up specifically is because lists like Armored Core, or even just Warjack lists in general, mercenary lists which have problems contesting and playing the long game, all love Alexia 2 for giving you that edge and not actually requiring that much investment in upfront into doing it. Plus, they're nerfing, not Direct Spirits, the other spirit rule.
No, it is Direct Spirits.
Oh, no, Soul Ward as well. Whatever it is, this thing that they're specifically...
You can't prevent people from gaining souls anymore.
Oh, yes. Really? When did that happen?
It's in the Oblivion Seed CID. Oh, right. It's specifically because now every Archon basically has that rule, and otherwise it would mean that literally no one gets any souls.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, well, it means that Alexia can actually not get randomly counted by, like, the Supreme Guardian.
That's polite.
It means now those models will only stop you from taking their souls.
Yes.
I also talk to Alexia to remind me of the third caster that's playable in Sealhead Theme, which is Osrin. Don't bother. You don't bother because he's better than Irregulars, but if they want to nerf Osrin for, like, the fifth time, right, which I assume they will because that's the life of being a mercenary player, is forever Osrin nerf. There's a CID, you know it's coming. You know the Circle players will say it's going to be a Lord of the Feast nerf, but deep down we know it's going to be an Osrin nerf. So eventually,
actually Signar players, thank you very much.
talk about actual factions as opposed to meme tier factions.
Meme tier garbage, yes.
Osrin's quite good on theme force because snipe and fire effect are very good.
I mean, Osrin likes artillery, and this theme is full of good artillery.
So that's pretty nice, right?
Yeah.
And on top of that,
he really enjoys Stom Cannon.
He enjoys having 15-inch threat warjacks.
Yes.
That's quite good. Yeah, that's quite reasonable.
He does like Empower as well. Empower is just a good ability for him.
Absolutely. He also has Bullet Dodger, which on Alexia 2 is perfectly reasonable.
It's balanced.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite balanced. I agree with that. And also he has a way to get around the lack of damage buff in the Theme Force, which is don't worry about it. Take Gorman, put Snipe on him, and just, like, punch things a bunch with Drillers, which is, like, been consistently good since forever.
Yes.
So you don't need a damage buff if you have infinite attacks. The only downside is he doesn't get 3 points from having... for taking Warjacks.
And it means that his feat, which realistically is still a very big part of his, like, damage output, is curtailed.
Absolutely. So when you write his list, they tend to look actually quite disappointingly fair.
Yes.
So I don't feel comfortable with that, but he's probably, like, the third best warcaster in that theme force as it stands, just because he's Osrin. And it could be that if Irregulars gets nerfed further, or if he gets nerfed further, you end up playing him in that theme force.
Sure.
I could see that happening.
All right. And we've just been joined by Tom, which is not really related to the segue I've got about to happen, but, you know, Tom's here. Hey, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Hello. It's always related.
Okay, cool. Because we're about to talk about Kingmaker and the minor changes that have happened, because apparently Kingmaker can take steel heads, and apparently that means the entire theme force is completely different. Which is fair, because, you know, that includes the Iron Head, which means that, like, say, Magnus too, who always liked that theme force, now gets... Really?
Nah. I
guess, does he like that theme force better than Irregulars? Probably not.
I think what it comes down to is, do you want to take Trencher long gunners in Trencher infantry, or do you want Alexia 2
for free? Yeah, that's fair.
Right? That's what it comes down to. Because otherwise, it's pretty much the same. You don't get Gorman in Kingmaker, but Trencher long gunner is pretty good. And there are a bunch of, like, good casters in that. Good casters. There are two casters in that theme that can play with Trencher long gunners: Damiano and Magnus 1. Magnus 1 has a snipe. Magnus 1 can play with artillery pieces and protect them. Magnus 1, unfortunately, is still Magnus 1.
It is a bit of a character defect.
Yes,
Magnus 1 does get the ability to have more threat range on his garbage warjacks, but that still means he's playing garbage warjacks.
Yeah, yeah, it's sad times.
One of the best feats in the game.
I mean, it's a pretty good feat in other factions. It's like a full fucking, like, it's like an old school Veil 1 feat. It's great.
Oh, yeah. It's basically the same.
Exactly.
Well, actually, I think it might be better, because this feat says no free strikes.
Yeah, boom.
Value. Yeah, you also don't have to spend focus to run during the movement portion.
Thank goodness, no.
Yep.
The small mercies are important.
Indeed. Anything else you want to bring up with Kingmaker, then?
No.
Okay, cool. In that case, I guess we should move on to the...
Oh? I have a slight question about Kingmakers.
Mm-hmm.
So, like one of the things people used to take it for the Feigned Death, and then some people randomly brought Boom Howlers for some reason. That's not important. Like, is Feigned Death not important enough in the meta anymore to, like, justify trying to take this tier?
I think it's suffered because... I think it's a roundabout way it suffers primarily because of Vengeance. Because Feigned Death is better in a shooting meta. Because Feigned Death is just a better rule in general when you're in a gun line. Because No Knockdown Tough is kind of terrible when you think about it into shooting, because it just means that, oh, okay, I guess you just get shot again, right? the kind of gun lines, especially trencher long gunners, who have a very nasty habit of, if they can kill something, they will very reliably kill it with minimum effort. So again, if your unplayable Magnus 1 snipes them and they're able to exist in their normal capacity, like, they can just kill 22 infantry models kind of casually as well, if they get to aim and do their full double tap. But we're not in that kind of meta anymore. We're instead of with a meta where a bunch of your models, opponents' models, are going to be hidden, or they're going to be behind buildings, and they're like, going to have vengeance.
Spain Death still dies to Judicator.
Yes.
It's the old Dice of Doomblade argument. It's
not
particularly good.
Yeah.
Like, Feign Death is a rule.
Dice of Sprays.
Absolutely Dice of Sprays. So Feign Death is a rule you prefer to have than not have. It used to be, like, kind of relevant on the Warcaster themselves against some...
A lot of assassinations. Yeah. Like, Rahana is one we just went into. Completely falls apart if Magnus just hits himself in the face and falls over somehow.
Oh, I mean, can still... I still Death 14 caster. Like, will die to Iris 1.
Again, you can't shoot it. Feign Death.
If you shoot yourself. Yeah, that's true.
Specifically what I mean, right?
It's fair.
Yeah, yeah.
Alright, 1-0 for Kingmakers. Alright, next theme.
Let's go with the actual theme that's gone through changes, which is Talion Charter. Affy?
So many changes here. I feel like the best place to start with it is with a shade list. So imagine every shade list you've ever seen. Now, it's slightly better. The reason why it's slightly better is you get, is it Sack Pawn on all the solos? Now, the solos don't just automatically die because one of them's on the medium base and one of them doesn't have defensive values. Because now it happens that 12-13 is not a defensive value.
I mean, one of them is the fucking doctor.
Yeah. Like. So now that those guys get to live for a longer period of time, your pirates themselves get to have 4+ her knockdown tough for longer. Hawk herself gained lunge and sprint, so you get some value out of her while still keeping her alive for passive. Scallywag is just a boss. Like, he's not a stalker, right? But that's okay, because not everything in the game has to be a stalker to be good, which is what we're learning from this. Light hints to PP.
Nobody remembers what a stalker is anymore. They haven't played against Cricks in like 6 months.
Yeah, apparently that's the truth. This is what I've seen. But I still have it etched into my memory through some form of PTSD. So a Scallywag is pretty good.
I mean, Rahana, the caster we were just talking about, is also, you know, a noted stalker abuser.
Escort plus manifest, apparently so.
It's pretty good, right? Anyhow.
And the big buff that Che got, in addition to Scallywag, is the Blockader. So what the Blockader does for Che is it gives him a model that has 4-inch melee, so it can activate before you activate the press scanners. Walk up, punch over the press scanners, clear them up, then the press scanners get to activate and kill a bunch of shit. It also threats, 10, 12, 14 inches with a free charge with Shay, which is a long way.
Mm.
And in a list that enjoys long reach, it's nice to have an additional model to follow that up. You don't care about its guns, so it's nice that they got buffed over the course of the CID, but the most important thing is it went down in points cost.
Yes, 33 is incredibly generous.
33 is a nice place if what you're going to be doing is just punching with the Colossal.
You can almost trade a Colossal at that point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Certainly you can trade it for any other Colossal, because it will be, apart from a Hyperion, it is cheaper than all of them. And even the Hyperion is like, well, there's an Arcanist or two glued to that thing. So
I mean, the same thing is true with...
The Blockaders?
Yeah, because you take 1-2 Powder Monkeys just because of how the points work out.
Yeah, that's okay.
So it's much the same.
Yeah.
The downside of an Armour 19 Colossal is that it dies to anything. The upside of playing an Armour 19 Colossal with Shay is it will always, pretty much always, get to charge whatever you want it to charge, because it out-threats it. And it has Phantasm, so it won't be shot off the table.
Yes.
So you get to play around the Armour 19 side of it reasonably well, and sometimes you can engage it and then flood the space around it with press gainers and now Sea Dogs that are 11 points and have native tough and add such a value, which is kind of beautiful. The Powder Monkey. Have we played with or against Powder Monkeys?
I have played against a Powder Monkey. That thing is, like, the random, like, Steelhead Arcanist having, like, you know, empowers, like, yeah, whatever. He's a 4-point dude, man. You're only going to have the one, and he's got empower, I guess. Powder Monkeys are 2 points and is basically a Cuskimp.
Yes.
The Mad Cap.
Mad Cap.
He's got the Mad Cap Explosion Rule. And if for anyone who hasn't actually been on the receiving end of that Mad Cap Explosion Rule, that is, like... The Powder Monkey is the reason the Mad Cap got nerfed.
Yeah.
Because, like, hang on a minute. When I have a model that I don't feel bad throwing away, like, say, because it's a flag bitch or some shit, right? Turns out that's a really good model to have. Oh, sorry, there's a freaking patrol boat and it's just gone past. Blaring along. Anyway.
Did it, ca- Did it find you again?
Yeah, it's the jank police. They go, no, they're after you, Tom. That's what's happening.
They heard you.
They heard you. But yeah, when you have a powder monkey just on a flag, it's the worst fucking thing. Because you're like, this fucking turd monkey, who's like 13-10, has no wounds, but is actually def 15 to attack if you're living in melee. Because it's got monkey muscle. No, it's just if you're in melee with a model, you suffer minus two, right? So it's just annoying in a whole bunch of ways, but if you kill it, it will just explode randomly. And for a rule that seems random at first glance, catastrophic explosion is very controllable and very nasty.
It's really nice when your support models have the capacity to do extensive work in the late game. And a powder monkey is, because of the nerf, you can't control if it's actually going to do excellent work, because you can't choose when it's going to happen. Yeah. Your opponent has to choose when it's going to happen.
But it also has an ancillary attack.
I would be taking the model without that rule.
Yeah.
And that rule can lead to changes in attrition, and in certain type matchups, you will win them because the powder monkey has that rule.
Yes.
So that's a nice buff for him. And the whole list itself just plays together really nicely. And I think the biggest part of it is actually the scallywag. Having a model that threats really far, that is like mat 9, pound strength 14, threatens casters, it threatens Arknode Warjacks, it threatens a lot of important models that you really want to push back.
One thing that that crits do not have, that pirates do have, is the Commodore Cannon. And that means that one thing that stalkers do not have that Scallywag can have is reliably showing up and having a knockdown caster of one of your press gangers going like, hey boss, Hawk, who stabs someone and then sprints next to the caster so that you can Scallywag it to death.
A knockdown caster that's already copped power 18.
Yeah, pretty good.
And I guess notionally, it should also be noted that the Blockader itself has a 17-inch walk and shoot threat with its 2d3 power 14 sprays that can't be shield guarded.
Yep.
So that's a thing.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Probably more sprays because you can powder monkey that guy as well for the extra
2d3 plus 1.
Yeah.
And speaking of the effect of powder monkeys on colossals, hello, Bart's a caster again.
Yes.
He went up by 2 warjack points. The guy went down by 3. I think from memory, the total is something like a 14 to 16 point difference between his irregulars, post-nerf irregulars version of the Italian Charter coming out, not including the bonus rules that everyone got.
So here's another aspect too, is that all the pirate chassis gained an extra armor and a bunch of discounts and some buffs in general. The Mariner, for instance, is now a very serviceable jack.
It still has a bloody load rule. I hate that rule.
I probably do as well. I've never...
Base-to-base rules are usually garbage.
It's not base-to-base.
It's within an inch.
Which is annoying. Slightly, but it's definitely going to be the rule that you'll forget randomly and just be like, what the fuck?
You will lose a game because of that rule, right?
Yes.
Either you forget it during an activation and you swear at the table a bunch, or alternatively, you know it's there, but you have an order of activation issue because it's turn fucking 6, right? And you need to shoot that model, but you also need to activate this other model, like, at the wrong
much
time.
More.
And all of a sudden, you're like, well, I could do everything. I didn't have this fucking load rule on this model's card. So I'm forever, as you might be able to tell from the tone of my voice.
I just read the monkey's card for the first time ever.
Isn't it a good model?
That is
fucking
the
ridiculous model.
Best utility flag bitch I've ever seen.
It's pretty good.
It's like ancillary attack, good. It's got empower, that's fucking good. Monkey bite, who gives a shit? But fucking catastrophic explosion, like you said, on top of it.
It's still got a pistol.
Yeah, that too, it's got a gun.
It's also a monkey, which means you get to play with adorable monkeys.
I've seen
and
pictures.
You get to poo at your opponent.
You get to accuse opponents of animal cruelty if they kill it. And finally, as a cherry on top, it is a sea dog, which means that it is also infatuated, I'm pretty sure, by Lady Hawk.
Oh, does it have a hand weapon?
Yeah, I think. Oh, let me check. Ooh. No, it doesn't. It has a bite. Fuck.
Okay. Money shot it? Does money shot only work on units?
Pretty sure, yes. Money shot does work on private. Oh my goodness. It's units.
It's units.
Okay.
Does it have native tough?
It does not.
So it would only have no knockdown from Grog's bar, and that's the only bar it's getting.
Okay. Never mind. Oh, specifically, yeah. Sadness. But regardless.
Bart, right? If you take 2 colossals with it.
And it benefits from double powder ration.
Relevant rules. So Bart with 2. The big problem with Bart in Mark 3 was that he cost 26 points and the galleon cost 39. So there's no way to actually write a list that looked vaguely decent just because of the points, right?
Now it's
28. And the galleon's 35. So if you take 2 galleons, you've netted yourself 10 points. which is a nice beginning point, right? Now, the big problem with the Galleon Forever is it's got 2d3 shots from its nipple guns that actually have threat ranges, and then this asymmetric drag shot that's only range 10 native. So frequently, you wouldn't actually be able to shoot with the drag gun, because if something went wrong, you're in threat range of your opponent's model,
yes,
and you potentially lose the Colossal. So you were never really playing around the drag gun, particularly in the early game. You're mostly threatening with the drag gun, not actually using it against particularly relevant models and throwing 2d3 shots out per turn. And sometimes you have these games where you're all like a 1 and a 2. You know, or maybe you only get like 3 shots, and it's just not enough to do work. And one way around that has forever been playing like, well, you can fix variance by rolling 43 shots a turn and taking 2 galleons.
Yes.
Now you get to do that, save a bunch of points, and take 2 powder monkeys, and you get 2d3 plus 2 shots per turn, which is a minimum of 6 shots, right, and an average of 10.
And Bart has one of those rules, great spells, Hot Shot, which does benefit from ancillary attack. Ancillary is not that great a rule in a lot of cases, because you don't get the benefits. Like, ancillary Adjudicator Rocket would be fantastic, and that's why you can't do that. But, like, ancillary a bunch of other different gunshots, you're like, it's an unboosted gun from a warjack, like, who cares?
Well, it's in Grimkin, and I just look at it and go, that's never a rule you're going
to
use.
I mean, it's like, okay, if the skinny boy, no, for some reason, forgets to kill a
it's
model...
It's actually quite good now with the Clockatress, right?
Yeah,
that's... But then again, like, the Clockatress is still Rat 6. Like, if you have a Tiny Mouse, sure, but... For one, this assumes that the Clockatress didn't kill it, or that there's not another Clockatress around.
Also, you just have a better... Even if it's you use it on a Clockatress, it's just still better to use, given, like, the Enrage.
Well, I think have it's more than you get some flex there.
Sorry, when there's, like, 1,000 Doom Reavers feeded on jamming me, bottom one, so that is quite useful.
What? Who feeded on them?
One of the many Vlad 2 players in the US.
Then the Clockatress has zero, like, has a very fucking poor chance of actually hitting those feeded on Doom Reavers with an ancillary attack.
I'm gonna suggest you play better, because I kill like 4 of them.
Roll harder, Brian. Just roll harder.
Fuck off, Tom.
I mean, this is just basically telling me that your first roll. You know, it's better use of like.
Was that like? Did he roll four nines to kill them?
Oh my god! You know, what's a better use of Cariana Rose, by the way, Tom, than what you just suggested? Ancillary attack, placing her within blast damage range of your shield guard, shield gunning one of their AoEs, having her die, and then now you have +1 to attack all the Doom Reavers.
Triple hot.
You're welcome, Tom. Thank you for this opportunity to explain some next level tech about how to get your Clockatress sprays that extra +1/+1 they need, and also not use ancillary attack.
The Victor is rat 1, so it actually couldn't hit anything.
Rat 4.
It's rat 4. It doesn't have inaccurate. And if you played against someone with giving it inaccurate,
no,
I'm gonna just
move. No. The Victor was almost rat. It rolled very low, okay? All my games, my opponent rolls garbage, and I rolled great, so.
Okay, well, that is a bit of a user error problem, I will admit. So,
Mr. Worldwide.
Mr. Worldwide.
The reason why all this is relevant is mercenaries have a bit of a adjudicator problem, because all their models that are good that you want to take die to adjudicator. Like,
rationally.
So we've sort of been searching for a way to win against adjudicator players that didn't involve the adjudicator players fucking up. And now maybe you have a way to do it. And it's a bit weird, because like Bart is all notionally about the batten down hatches, which is not a rule against Menoth, because...
Blessed.
Yeah, because blessed on everything, including the adjudicator. However, if you run the maths on 2 galleons with double powder rations and 2 monkeys shooting an adjudicator, you actually shoot the adjudicator off the table before you lose the galleon. And then you take,
is that magical now?
Dirge Seers, bro. You can take Dirge Seers in
you
that
can
list.
Take
or you take the...
Yes, that's actually...
Iona Hold never worked, because Iona would only ever work on 1 galleon.
No. Dirge Seers worked. I was more referring to the... I was thinking the wrong theme for us.
Okay, no worries. Dirge Seers gave all your models magical weapons. You now have the consistency of shots, because your average is 10, your minimum is 6.
Do you take Dirge Seers and Talion now?
Yeah.
Yes, so that was 2 things I'll get into.
What?
Finish your anecdote.
Yeah, so what that means is you can shoot the adjudicator off the table. They have some knockdown immunity in their list. If you roll well, you can just kill that. If you don't roll well, you just kind of have to put up with the fact that it'll take a while before Bart can actually feed. And you try to protect your galleons with your 20 plus rando tough sea dogs with no knockdown tough and 4+ tough that swarm in front of the galleons. And bastions will die to 2 hot-shotted galleons incredibly quickly, as will cinerators.
Hmm.
So you get to the point where, although you don't have defensive values, your offensive DPS is kind of absurd against their shit defensive values, and you're kind of advantaged, particularly because terrain doesn't matter that much because they're relying reasonably heavily on their own huge bases. So this, it's actually a playable game.
Even if you're playing into, like, Harby, which is the new fucking
I don't think you play Harby into that.
Well, the problem is,
who drops Harby into like, that much fucking hotshot?
Yeah, well, that's the catch, is, like, you can actually just... I mean, the main problem there is that they can use a Champion of the Order of the War to give Harby girded, but you still have a pretty decent shot.
Just shoot her in the face?
Yeah, well, they have 14, so many shield 14. Guards. And I don't know if it matters.
I don't think it matters, right? Because, like, the way you always play against Harby, at least the way I always played Bart into Harby back when could play Bart into Harby, is you don't kill Harby. You just shoot all the models, and then you just have enough DPS that it's kind of fine. And then her life total goes down. And when her life total goes down, it becomes really dicey for her.
Yeah, and you can actually legitimately cast broadside without feeling bad as well. You get even more shooting out.
That's
there.
True. You actually get to, because, like, Batten isn't.
Because you also can use powder monkeys to make up the fact that if you're casting broadside, you're not casting, like, you're not allocating focus or doing whatever, because you have powder monkeys for that in case you want to boost some jags or take a shot at, like, some fuckwit, like a champion of the Order of the War. I'm just going to round this out quickly with Talion Shard, because there are a couple of other updates. I did say the Mariner got changed. There's a new Warjack called the Swabber, which I, for whatever reason, unironically quite like.
Why?
It's got 2 guns. That's actually probably why. It's finally a Warjack that does
strength.
I won't talk about that. But it's finally specifically...
15! 15 is the answer in its power and strength.
Correct. I'm just assuming you can fix that, make it bigger, but it has...
that theme force.
It has 12 armor 20. Okay, well, that seems like a user...
Maybe another theme force.
Maybe another theme force. Mostly, it's just like... I like it. Finally, someone recognizes that the correct way to design a Warjack is kind of like designing a mech in Battletech, in that you put guns on both arms, not one arm and then an axe in the other. Or if you have an axe in your hand, you make sure the axe also has, like, an autocannon strapped to it as well, so you can shoot when you're not axing them.
The other Warjack release was the Duelist.
Yes.
Is it called Duelist? Or does it have Duelist?
Swashbuckler.
Okay, so it has the rule Duelist. So it's defense 15 against melee attacks, has dodge, has, you know, 3 initials because it has a soul.
It's basically a Kyazi Eliminator as a Warjack, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that model is playable. It's playable with...
It is?
Yeah, so it's playable with Fiona, and it's playable with Bullet Dodger casters.
Oh, fuck, it also has Defensive Strike. Okay, sure.
Yeah, so it has a lot of rules, and it's very annoying. It is playable. It's not fantastic. You'd prefer if it was, like, 6 points, but that's because I'm clearly an Ostrom player, and I think all Light Jacks should be 6 points.
All right, look, we've beaten around the bush. Let's just talk about Ostrom, and specifically his home.
Oh, not Fiona?
I was going to say, well, irregular... You're clearly getting... Okay, fine, Fiona first. But clearly we need to talk about irregulars. The elephant in the room of theme forces.
Yeah.
So much so that Privateer Press has literally done 2 CIDs to try and design mercs away from irregulars.
Yeah, so they've done to some job degree. That, but, like, we might as well talk about that now. So let's talk about, like, the good job that they've done, which is release Fiona, who is a caster who's good enough that you cannot take Fiona... Sorry, not take Ostrom in a list pair and... You're not an insane human being.
Yes.
Right? So the thing that Fiona does...
That's scary.
Yeah, it is scary. Like, she always had an excellent feat. She just had this problem where her spell list was really shit.
She basically was really Sokova 1, especially, like...
She wishes she was Sokova 1.
Yeah, well, she had the similar problem, like...
Sokova 1 had a really bad spell list.
But a good feat, right? Yes. Similar deal with Fiona. Feat is ridiculous.
So now she has a damage debuff. An armor debuff, and on top of that she has Befuddle, and Befuddle doesn't take control of the enemy model. The enemy model advances and your opponent's controller is still in control of it, which means it triggers things like countercharge, which Tauros had, which is pretty fucking good. And she got a sideways buff from the Irregulars nerf, because it used to be the case that if you have 1 lesser Warlock in your Irregulars list, you immediately lost a free solo.
You mean 27 Jack points instead of 28?
No. Then if you have 2 in your list, you lose 2 solos.
Right.
But now with the breakdown, if you take 2 lessers, you only lose 1 solo.
Okay.
So now you're not so disadvantaged from taking Ronai, Snapjaw, and Diane Scarif. If you take...
Oh, you mean lesser Warcasters, yes.
Yeah, yeah. If you take Starcross with a snake and you put Fiona's feet on top of that, that's just pretty fucking egregious.
Gross.
On top of that, Fiona's forever problem has been that her feet is amazing at protecting models against melee and pretty fucking average at protecting models from range. So what you've always wanted to take are models that are survivable against range attacks. And Submerge is pretty survivable against range attacks. Here, that's a good spell.
It's probably okay.
Lies. Snack has like a solid-ish stat line, but can also have Prowl with Pathfinder, and so pick up some stealth. Crows. Here, crows are pretty good with Befuddle. That's like quite a decent interaction. Another good interaction.
I know what's really annoying.
I have to stop you on that one.
What's wrong with Befuddle?
I played a lot of Scavengers and TK. But let's just say TK is easier to use than Befuddle.
What?
You could...
How expensive are your Arknotes?
Are they 0 points? Are they Kyazi Eliminators?
Are they Kyazi Assassins with Ross Mercy who can be Arc through out of command when they have parry and get Pathfinder from the objective? Like, you get...
The
it's
point
so
is,
easy. Like, it's zero cost to Befuddle. It's absolutely zero cost.
No. The point is not the Arknote part. Even if my Scavenger Slit had, like, 1,000 free Arknotes, so it was not going to fix the... The one issue that crows always did have is that even I cannot get over how bad the Rat 5 is.
Yeah, I don't mind boosted Rat 7.
Like,
yeah, it is a problem.
Like,
well, if you got
boosted Rat 7 is pretty good though, isn't it?
Yeah, I haven't found issues with boosted Rat 7. I haven't had issues. And the thing is, like, you also armor debuff them as well. So you're right; it does the same thing that Scabby does. But the plus side is because
Scabbard does the same thing Fiona does for crows.
And yes, but Scabby's feet is worse, and the problem with Scabby
is Befuddle
is
also
he
better.
Has to, yeah, and well, it, kind of, because it doesn't work on Warcasters, but it synergizes nicely with Countercharge. The problem with Scabby is
no, it also gives you more distance, doesn't it?
Yeah,
Befuddle gives you more distance, and
so you get way better chance to place a model exactly where you want it. Where TK is good, and it gives you a lot of flexibility as well, being a place rather than a movement.
Well, this is better because it gets around models that can't be placed.
Yeah, but I mean, but what I'm referring to in this case is because you're getting more distance, you can get around walls, you can get around forests, you can get things out of places that are really annoying to get to with a 2-inch
foot. Befuddle also is range 10, and TK is range 8. That's...
Yeah, but then the Arknode runs 14 inches as opposed to 12. So, I mean, it sort of averages out a little bit because of the range of your likely Arknode with a Fiona list. Although you can use Eliminators
if you're further. My whole point was Befuddle, excellent spell. TK, excellent spell. Crows, very, very medium unit. Even, like, I have had crows where you stack... What was it called? Feast of Worms on a heavy.
Sure.
You TK that around, and then like you can like, and then you can like icy grip something, and then like they're just like very good at underperforming with all the buffs.
Yeah, so I'm not really going to disagree with you there, but I feel like you're describing a list where you're going all in on the crows, and that you don't have any real focus to affect a follow up. Whereas when you take the double lesser warlock build, you have these two other warcasters who can fuel up the. Or take Fury from Snapjaw and Snek, who can then be your follow-up on turns where you're going all in on the spells. So I think the list itself helps accommodate some of the weaknesses which crows have, which sometimes like boosted 12s just aren't good enough to kill things, which is perfectly true. They're not always good enough to kill like things on mass.
You also it's the fact that crows themselves need a hound to actually be playable, whereas a lot of shit just doesn't. You want the smallest
like,
kill stuff.
I think if I was building a Fiona list, I would just, for the backstab thing, I would just take two units of Eliminators.
Or Kyazi Assassins. Kyazi Assassins have it.
And Kyazi Assassins.
So,
I would much rather have Kyazi Assassins than crows for
I take a unit
why,
of each. I'll go through the list. So it's one of each. Like, one Assassin, one crow. The Assassins become the Arknode. Take both of the Lessers, take two Tauros, take Anastasia, Silas, and then a Freebooter. The Freebooter is to give no knockdown to Snapjaw. Anastasia is because when you go first with Fiona, you get Occultation and Ross Mercy up, and then the upkeep for free for the rest of the game. Whereas when you go second, sometimes you don't get to put out both upkeeps, and then you can never put out Ross Mercy usually, because you need Occultation with Fiona for her to live. I found that list to be like reasonably effective at being the like super annoying to play against, and you have enough things to do with your focus every turn, but some follow-up from the lesser warlocks as well. The biggest problem I had with that list is that sometimes you don't kill things fast enough in a 7-turn game, and you kind of need like an 8 or a 9-turn game to kill all the models. Because although you're not really losing models, you're not that efficient at killing large quantities of models as well.
You're not getting a hot-shotted galleon in there, for instance.
You're not. And like the biggest problem I found with that list is I don't know what I'm supposed to play. I don't know. Although I found it to be very effective, I haven't found it to be more effective than Ostrom in any matchup.
Yes. Oh, boo. Oh, no.
All right. Good excuses we're going to get to anyway.
Yeah, Ostrom. All right, move on.
So, Ostrom. So, Ostrom suffered a number of nerfs.
Unjust nerfs.
No.
Bulldoze, now unplayable trash of a spell. Minimal utility. He's now lost a free solo, which means that I now have to play 3 points down, which is a shame. Overall, like all jokes aside, I don't understand why they keep on nerfing irregulars and like these warjacks and making all these changes when it's so fucking obvious that the problem with Ostrom is that when I feat on, say, a basher, right, and then I trample the basher forward and kill some models, and then flak field with the basher, and then I activate Anastasia, she espionages, and then that basher walks forward to engage a bunch of long gunners, and that basher is now like 30 inches away from Ostrom, that for some reason that basher is still armor 22. Right, that's clearly the problem with Ostrom, is that his jacks get to be armor infinity even when they're not in his control range, and instead of just affecting that one aspect of his card, PB keeps on changing rules that affect the rest of the game, or rules that affect the weaker casters in Mercenaries,
and they certainly affect him more than Ostrom, who can like dwarf jacks in general are just overstatted, overruled certainly, and
just,
to my mind, just undercosted.
No, they're not. Because they're not overcosted with Gordon, who's like a perfectly playable caster, and all the jacks are fine with him. They're just
overcosted. Sorry, undercosted
with specifically Ostrom.
Yes.
It's Ostrom is the problem. But the other problem is, for the most part, the rest of Mercenaries is like playable B. Fiona is an exception to that, who's quite good. And then Ostrom is carrying the load. So It's kind of a frustrating place to be as a mercenary player, because you kind of have to play. It's like playing Signar in Mark II. You've got your Haley 2, and then you're rotating through the other casters to cover the particular meta weaknesses of Haley 2.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, well, if it looks like they have a list that can beat Haley 2, I'm going to play Kane so that I can just kill them.
Yeah.
Because
and then we just surrender or we run to Legion.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was...
Yes, today we pronounce that Judicator.
Yeah, I mean, that was the plan from the beginning anyway, so yeah. Yeah, you've got, like, I mean, you say that, like, oh yeah, Dwarf Jacks are, like, you know, balanced with Gordon, but, like, are they really? I mean, you still got Blasters and Gunners. The fucking Blaster,
I think they're balanced with Gordon. The reason why is they don't threat that far. So your opponent has the opportunity to, even with a hand cannon one, it just threats 17 inches.
Sure.
Right? It's not that far. Your opponent can interact with the models. They don't have infinite defensive stats.
That is a bit disgusting, but again, like, I think that, I mean, for 10 points, a driller is just so effective. For 6 points, the lights are top of their class.
They are. They're a very good model.
And then the fact that they can't be pushed, which admittedly would not be as big an issue, except the fact that it's Ostrom at the helm, yeah, and he can play as aggressive a scenario game as he wants.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these casters do, like, one of the reasons, for instance, I didn't think Bart was anything special until now was specifically because he didn't really have a theme that got all of his things together in the way he wanted, and now he does, and the fact that he now has access to Dirge Seers, which he can get points for.
Is that the only Crick's model they got access to?
No, the Shard Pirates, which I was going to get into briefly. Shard Pirates with Lord Rockbottom are pretty good.
Yeah, probably. I don't think they're...
I don't think you need them, but they are cool to have.
Yeah, it might be that if you're going to play Fiona in that theme force, you're playing into Shard Pirates.
Yeah.
It's possible that's what you're doing.
And it's probable there's other, like, casters there that want it. Like, I can see Shay with Shard Pirates, because his Shard Pirates threaten forever.
Yeah,
And they are like, if you knock any caster down, then you can get X number of sprays onto that caster, as long as you have board space.
I feel like those are games you're going to win anyway.
Probably. But, you know, not always. And, you know...
If someone's letting you knock their caster down with your pretty static Commodore cannon, I think you're winning that game. I think you're winning that game without the sharp
edge. Hopefully.
You'd be surprised what people let you do to their casters. I'm just saying
that I love dying to random shit, and why not die to, like, a Commodore cannon?
Why don't we expand your life experience?
Why don't we just throw in the swabber as well, right? Because I keep going on about that Warjack. Yeah. Why don't I just get dragged into my death?
Kill him.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a War Machine model until it's killed me in some dumb capacity. And yes, Ostrom, again, he's still fucking good. Like, he would be better in Irregulars if Irregulars was a better theme. And eventually, Hammer Strike.
If Warjack's counted towards 3 points, then like they like, do in Tally and Charter, I would 100% play the fuck out of Ostrom in Irregulars.
Eventually, there's going to be probably a Hammer Strike theme, like CID. And let's be honest, the later that is postponed, the better, because that's when they'll actually probably get around to addressing some of this. And it might be that Ostrom becomes savagely actually nerfed, as opposed to his current pretend let's deal with it later nerfings he's getting right now.
What I'd love to see is all the theme forces change so that you're able to take all of the warcasters in all of the themes. So you have a bunch of themes and mercenaries.
I doubt that will happen. That's like too much work for them.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is, like, if you do that, all of a sudden you can nerf Ostrom because all of a sudden, like, you can take, I don't know, I don't even know where it'd be relevant, but you could take someone like Gaston in Hammerstrike, and Gaston actually fixes a lot of the problems of Hammerstrike, namely hands out Pathfinder to the entire army, right?
Yes.
That's pretty tasty.
I mean, Siegecrawler with run and gun sounds rather funny to me.
Yeah, and you're, like, getting 3 points for all of it, you're getting recursion.
You get something that's actually worth putting Dauntless Resolve on as well.
Absolutely. There's a lot of win in there, and he's unfortunately unable to access all the 3 points that he needs for that theme force. So I feel like if you change up the theme forces to allow mercenaries the flexibility that other factions have, then nerf Ostrom, then Mercs will be in a really interesting place. If you just nerf Ostrom, but leave Mercs with the lack of intercaster cross theme force flexibility that other factions have, then you might see mercenaries drop from being, like, not top tier but competitive with top tier to very much like a mid-tier level, because it's just Ostrom that's holding them up.
But now Fiona can help.
She can,
but you need to find a list. You need to find a list that complements Ostrom, because otherwise it's just like Ostrom.
Yeah, but
and
you were saying that she could be the
you could legitimately play like Fiona paired with Bart, and I think you can play into most of the game, and it's fun.
That's what most people get these days.
Yes.
No.
So
we're not
are
all fucking
Menoth,
okay?
Menoth, Grimkin, or Grimkin, or Scorn.
Scorn. All of the game, nah. That's not a thing.
It's just like not Signar, right?
Fuck off.
All of not Signar is
fine. Signar has won like 2 tournaments back.
In Sweden, right? Is that what happened? Or was it the Swedish guy you did?
The Swedish guy, Dan.
How glorious. Daniel.
Yeah.
That's just testament to the game, though.
Yeah.
Like, even Signar, which is bottom of the bottom, can win games.
All right.
Especially if there's a good pilot.
So, full disclosure, I'm going to be leaving the cast soon. And I don't mean, like, leaving the cast as in leaving Dark Guidance forever. Sorry, guys, you're still stuck with me. But I mean, I'm actually going to physically go to work. So, on that note, we should probably get the disgusting part out of the way. Because we have one caster who has resolved the last CID, which wasn't even Merc-related, but was ancillary Merc-related, get buffed. And that's Constance Blaze.
Actual playable caster.
Yeah.
Actual player caster.
Funnily enough, most Constance fun Blaze caster for a caster that actually can spend most of the game running around and feet. Like, the only piece of interactivity she does is just a feat.
Yeah, she's pretty good. Like,
well, no, now she's also got a spell that's pretty good.
She hasn't changed anything.
I know, but
I mean, you're
saying she just feats, but she doesn't just feats.
Oh, yeah, she Crusader's Calls then feats, but
no, she has, like, Vlad 2's feat on steroids. Sorry, Vlad 2's transference spell on steroids.
Yeah, it's isn't just a passive ability now.
No, it's a spell. It's passive.
It's a spell?
Completely passive. Everything she does is passive now.
That's fucked.
Her claiming souls, passive. Her Vlad 2, her damage boosting, passive. Also, by the way, it doesn't work on... I think it still works on guns.
Still fucking works on guns. It doesn't work on jacks.
Oh my god, did you say... Okay, so there might have been a slight awesome buff that occurred.
Yeah, it's
solo, the displacement solo.
Oh, like Bamfist?
So, no, not that one. The one that has the Danny 2 ability.
What?
The Banish ability.
Oh, the Gwen Stacy. Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
the
Gwen
initial Stacy. Additions of that with Ostrom, by the way, were kind of absurd because you snipe her or you fire for Vector, and she threats infinite distance, and she's like stealth AD, speed 7, def 15, has tough.
Pathfinder, it dodge, true sight. Oh my goodness.
It used to be a range 12, power 12 gun that if you hit, you displace the model D3 plus 1 inches. Now it's range 10, power 12.
And you have
one
inch
only, and you have to damage.
Which is pretty unplayable, except with Ostrom. admittedly, Constance as well. Constance can boost the damage, but again, like you can, like there's a lot you can do with that ability.
So her press, her precursors go 6, 9,
Constance's is
10 inches with Constance, 13 when you trigger Vengeance, 15 with Crusader's Call, and they're usually power and strength 16, weapon master blessed with Hand of Fate, which is pretty good. And the best thing is, that annoying standard bearer that doesn't have a melee weapon now has a purpose because when he dies, you trigger vengeance from the unit. So
yes.
You put that guy forward with the batter right in at the front and you just let him die. And you feel really good about it.
So Flame of Darkness is a theme that crosses three different factions. Kador, Mercenaries, and Signar. I'll be perfectly blunt. I don't think the Kador version is that great because it's specifically only Zakova 1 and 2.
Fuck
Zakova 2, the real issue is this. Zakova.
Let me live my dream.
I mean, you can fucking live your dream if you want. Apparently, like, your dream is basically involving getting jammed by Kador players, so I've got no comment there. The main thing is, Zakova 1 doesn't have any faction buffs that really make precursors and the like bullshit. Whereas Constance, Striker 1, Striker 2, Maddox, and frankly, Ashlyn all do.
By the way,
she's got a pretty good feat.
Her feat is good, but again, like
it will deliver those models.
The real kicker I'm actually getting at is that, simply put, I'd rather play Zakova 1 and Zakova 2 for that matter in Wolves of Winter.
There were two.
I would like to try it.
It's probably worth trying. Yeah,
there are also two armor debuff solos that came out in the Scene Force: the Hermit and the Dude on the Horse.
Oh my god, fucking Hermit!
And both of those models are legal in Irregulars, which means Irregulars now has a 10-point damage swing. Not.
The Hermit is dumb. We've talked
about this. I'm getting out of here. That's too much. All right, peace, guys.
Farewell.
He's gone.
So that means you can get a gun bunny.
Thanks, Chris.
No worries. Catch him. Up to pound strength 18 with Gordon.
Fuck off.
So it can be Matt 8, pound strength 18 gun bunny.
Wait,
which is...
so now that Chris is gone, well, I have to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys talk about the Steelhead team?
Yeah.
We did.
Did you rate it highly?
I rated it highly with Damiano and with week 3 version 1 version of Rahera, and maybe with week 3 version 2 of Rahera, and then unplayable trash with rest of faction that isn't Ostrom, because Ostrom can play in anything. Principally because...
I watched it play. I thought that was like one of like the best Merclas I've seen play, so... It was really good.
Who ran it?
Damiano.
Okay.
Yeah, so Damiano makes it look really good because he can repro back the artillery, so you get multiple activations out of them, and everything he does synergizes with everything in the list. So he looks really good in the Theme Force, but the Theme Force itself doesn't have a damage buff, and it doesn't have an inherent way to protect the Steelhead... cannon crews, artillery pieces on the reg. So it needs a caster who can do both of those things in order for the Theme Force really to shine, and needs a caster who's able to sort of bring up the defensive stats in general of Steelhead, Halberdiers, or Cav. So it's basically just Damiano who does that, Rahera kind of does that a bit, and Ostrom is like just generally good and so can play with anything. That's the take that we had on it.
Yeah. I just quite like having a, what's it called, Steelhead Cav with Bulldoze. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, it's cute. It's a nice rule to have on them. It's a free rule, and the changes that happened to them sort of took them back to the point where they actually have like significant DPS. The thing that really annoys me, though, is that the threat range on that Cav model, if you're going to trigger its significant DPS, is 11.5 inches, which is quite low. So it's not... That's the lowest threat range of any Cav model in the game. So that's a bit unfortunate.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, it's playable. It just means that they're more of a counter-punch Cav as opposed to how Cav are usually used, which is as like a Vanguard, a Strike Force, an Alpha Strike model. So yeah. they function differently, but they still have a significant impact on the game that is roughly greater than their points cost. So they're a good model.
Yeah. So what is the... did you guys talk about Cephalix?
No, we kind of ignored them. The only thing we talked about was that Thessus becomes a bit irrelevant when Fiona exists in the faction. And then we moved on because we discussed them last year.
So, I always read Siphon's card, and the numbers always looks really big, because it like says like plus 3 speed, strength, and armor. And then he has like Breaststealer and like some and Gallows, which I think is like okay spell.
Yeah.
But like everyone says he is awful.
Yeah, so like look at a Siphon list, and then look at an Ostrom list. Yeah. And what happens is the turn after Ostrom feats and the turn before Ostrom feats, his army is armor 19. And the turn before and after Siphon feats, his army is armor 17.
That's fair. They become behemoth stat lines on feat turn.
Yeah.
Which is good, but it's not like game breaking, unlike Ostrom.
yeah, and principally because if you survive that turn, the rest of his army will just absolutely disintegrate the turn after. Because it doesn't have defensive stats.
Absolutely. Well, it was one of the reasons when you looked at Infernals until, like, the last week of CID, all of their... they still have victim... Like, their heavies are, like, 25 boxes or something.
Yeah.
And they were... even now when they've been buffed, they're 11-18.
Yes. Not a real stat line.
I mean, that was one of the reasons why I'm playing Crucible Guard, is to, like, your jacks just fucking die. Because they are max 11-20 baseline if they have a shield, and 10-18, I think, or 11-18 without it, which is like most like 2/3 of your heavies. And those models just evaporate.
That's true, but Crucible Guard has good guns. They have like a kind of a, like a niche in their meta, but I don't know what like the Cephalix are supposed to be good into.
Well, they were invented at Mark III. They played a pretty good while through Mark II. I mean, they were invented at Mark II. They played a pretty good while at the beginning of Mark III. But then the game has moved on, and they haven't gotten really anything new to play with.
I think a new scenario pack might help them out a lot.
Yeah, so Ambush really wide, and the spread.
Yeah, the spread of those scenarios plays... If you play Thexus, not with heavies, but just with fucking infinite dudes, I think you can play...
I think that's how you play Thexus to me. Like, that's just how it feels like to me.
Yeah, you don't have to. You can play more heavy
absolutely.
Stuff. But yeah, I think that is where he's strongest. And maybe there's a reason now to play with that... With the more spread scenarios... Maybe you want to play him over Gorton with that archetype. It's possible. It is possible.
I mean, I think Jan, when we went to WTC, was playing a Thexus Gorton pair, if I remember correctly.
Sure.
So
I'm playing like 200 models.
And I mean, I think Jan went on the weekend 5-2 or 6-1 with his Gorton list, and most of those ones were on scenario in the current packet.
Gorton's still strong.
I mean, he mostly just defeated and people lost.
Like, did like a damage bomb situation for the infantry.
Sorry? They still buff, right? Because the new Cephalix guys, the Cephalix guys who buff the other Cephalix guys, those units, I'm really explaining this particularly well for radio, aren't I? So there's one Cephalix unit that adds +4 strength, speed, and mat. +2?
Speed? I haven't seen Cephalix on the table since early Mark III.
Increases the strength of a Cephalix model by 4 points. And like that's pretty impactful. So they're inherent. So although the solos no longer buff the damage output of the infantry still buff the damage output of the infantry.
They have a lot of internal synergies. They really felt like a, and I still believe this, they feel like a limited faction test run before they were because I think right after that was Convergence.
Yes.
Because they are the most limited faction, because they are like literally a limited faction in Mercs. Because they are a limited faction that can't exist outside of a faction that already exists.
I feel like the Clockatrice was like originally like a Cephalix model.
What? Why?
It could have been.
What made you think that?
Paralyzed sprays, and then like all the Cephalix models have like laser beams pointing out of it. So,
Spray 8, power 12.
Okay. the gun I could see existing, but the cockatrice is, like, completely outside of the theme of that of Grimkin. I mean, outside of the theme of Cephalix. But the gun, sure, could have maybe once upon a time existed in that faction as a test. Yeah. But I mean, I'm pretty sure you can reason a way to get that gun almost anywhere if you just think hard enough. Like, you could see it in Scorn, I mean, yeah, or Circle, or...
Imagination is powerful.
Yeah. Signar, because it's a paralyze. They have electricity.
Yeah.
Sure. Like, I think you'd be hard-pressed in a couple, but I'm pretty sure you could fuck your way through it if you really wanted to.
Yeah. Alright, so I assume you guys haven't talked about the new theme, the Flame of Darkness.
We had literally just started when Chris ran off. And then we got sidetracked into catching you up and just shitting on shit.
I really like the Archons. Like, the mercenary Archons.
Thamorite and Moro?
Yeah. Like, the Thamorite one's pretty good with Fiona. And, like,
fuck, it's good with a Fiona.
Like, fun with Cross. Gaston Cross is a fun caster to play. He's not great, but he's definitely fun.
He goes Super Saiyan.
He does. And the Archon makes him go
the
more
the fact
Super
that
Saiyan.
He plays in, like, Infernals just kind of... I wonder how that could even possibly fucking work.
I could see myself playing the Moro one with Ashlyn and Crucible Guard Rocket Men. And just be like really trolly, and then take like two units of Thorn Gun Mages, and provided I'm allowed to push models, win bottom of seven, being one control point up with or more or whatever it is, right? It's up some number of
control points. So I guess we're in the mercenary cast. Are you excited for the potential Ashlyn 2?
I want my fucking Gordon 1.
That's
Gordon,
not happening.
Gordon is the oldest warcaster in the game.
Yeah, but
not
he
go epic.
But he lost.
All I want is Gordon riding a war marmot. That's what I want.
You're not getting that.
I want Gordon on a war marmot.
You're not
it's
fucking
all I've
getting
ever wanted.
It.
I've wanted this for like 5 or 6 years, right? I've been lobbying for it. I've been Gordon's greatest advocate.
You know what? At this point, just send PP a bunch of fan mail to do it as a mini crate model.
I want that. I also want my rules for Gordon on a war marmot.
No, if you're getting anything, it's Gordon on a turtle, and you'll become the first V2 model.
And I'm pretty sure... I'm pretty sure that with Repo 5 or something done just to make it... Just to fix it in terms of balance, but, I'm pretty sure... They showed Gordon 2 in the card game, which I know doesn't actually equate to the actual game.
Sure.
But he was, like, some Lely's Resistance fighter or something in that.
Okay.
Which could happen.
I would love that. He would gain Repo 3 from Gibbs.
But we know we're getting Ashlyn.
Is she on a horse?
We don't know. At Lock and Load, they're going to literally design her in front of the...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's actually exciting.
Well,
or
depends.
Terrified. Depending on how this plays out.
The way it was written, and I'm a little vague on it now, I mean, like, they could design the physical aspects, like, of what the model will look like.
Okay.
Or it'll be the rules, and I'm not sure which it is.
Okay, so I'm hoping that she has Lola, and that they force Lola onto her.
What?
Because if we're going to go with physical characteristics of the model, then we should surely be advocating for the most broken weapons we can put on this model.
You're fucking dumb.
Yeah, that's true.
Jesus Christ.
I'm excited for Ashlyn. Like, she was the first warcaster I really played with a lot. Was Ashlyn learning the game? I learned the game through Ashlyn.
Yeah, your Facebook profile used to be Ashlyn Delise.
Yeah. She's fun to play with, and I think that a Ashlyn 2 could be interesting as well.
And are you going to get the Ashlyn statue?
No.
You're not?
I'm not going
to. Okay.
I have not
even use it as an objective?
How big is it?
Well, it's like a building for Mon Pauk.
Okay.
They've already shown the design. It's the Statue of Liberty as Ashlyn with a sword.
That's awesome.
So it's just Ashlyn standing in that pose on, like, the monument that looks like the Statue of Liberty's monument.
If it's actually the size of an objective, that might.
I don't know how big those are, honestly. I've never seen them on the table, but it's, like, give or take that size.
Sure.
So I was like, that seems...
So...
Yep.
Speaking of Lock and Load...
Yep.
You're going, right?
Yes.
And I'm going, and Hickling's going.
Yep, and is Garmory. So Garmory, Hickling, and I are in the same room.
Nice. Yeah. So theoretically, there could be a situation where someone Brian is rooming with plays me in the IG final.
Yep. Yeah, that's possible.
So I just want to know, in this exact situation, in about 2 weeks, who are you getting the Subway sandwich from?
Well, this time I won't make the mistake and I'll buy it for both. As long as it's not me in the finals with you, because that would make it difficult.
Oh my god.
And would require probably forfeiting in order to make that happen.
I mean, I'd be okay with that.
I'm sure you would. Do you know what you're playing at Lock and Load?
Yeah, I'm playing the meme Grimkin. I've sent pictures to the groups.
Yes, they look nice. The black and white with the blue highlight colors.
Yeah. So, what do you think they're announcing this year? Because they always have a keynote.
That's a good point. I mean, Zoo is...
Yeah, that's what I thought they were going to announce.
But, like, the way I think Zoo should be done, and the way that they've kind of... Like, Zoo would be the easiest way to either move into Mark IV, or to work into a branching game.
I'd be absolutely terrified if they announced a Mark IV.
I don't think they will, but I'm just saying because what they can do with that, or, like, because Zoo is essentially War Machine in another context. Because it's just...
It's a different continent, right?
Yeah, it's a different continent, and it's essentially Africa in the way that, like, all of European nations just own parts of it. That they own, like, segments of the continent as, like, what were they called?
Protectorate?
No.
A colony?
Yeah, colonies. Not even colonies, but they owned the area.
The mineral rights.
That kind of shit. Where they all...
It's like East India Company, is that sort of thing?
Yeah. And they all wanted their, like, colony. Where they can go, like, yeah, we own it, we're so important, and now we can, like, take all the natural resources and fuck over the locals. Essentially, Signar, Kador, like, they're all there. So you can completely rewrite the story, and, like, they're all dealing with their own shit while all the shit's happening in the Iron Kingdoms, which would have ramifications over there, but would be in weird different ways. Because
who's
it would...
King Leopold of Iron Kingdoms? who's running the hand economics over there in Zoo Town?
You could probably, like, Lael could have at one point, but they...
Oh, dear.
I mean, their entire thing was, like, they were just, like, a bunch of corrupt, like, incredibly, like, noble officials who just were incapable of actually running a country.
Oh, it does sound like Belgium.
Yeah. It could also be the other mercenary faction, Ord.
Okay.
Because their king is generally like a laid back, like, I'm not a smart leader, but I only pretend to be like that because I want you all to, like, not look at me.
Sure.
So they're actually quite crafty with it. It's been a while since I read any of the fluff. I mean, I could see Kador just being like, fuck these people, hand economics. And Signar could do it just because everybody's shitty when it comes to colonization.
Well, Signar's sort of shitty in general when it comes to diplomacy.
Stab your allies in the back.
Yeah.
I mean, the Protectorate...
I hope it's not a new faction, because I feel like the community has, like, very angry, like, about, like, getting so many new...
They're angry about new factions, you think?
Some people are, because it feels like they're just spreading thin.
The vocal minority are. I'm sure, like, the majority of people are not.
Yeah.
But I think the common group think right now is that, like, all the new... small factions are quite, like, over-tuned, because they're, like, small, right? So they're technically not supposed to get many releases, but...
So...
But, like...
I can see that, but it also, they're over-tuned, but, like... Grimkin, I don't feel like it was over-tuned. I feel like Grimkin came out really unbalanced in the way it was designed. While I feel it was the very opposite with Crucible Guard, and they, I do feel, is over-tuned, where I think... They ended up doing one thing really well, and their entire faction identity revolves around it, and that gives them a lot of, like, really core weaknesses.
Yeah.
And they don't feel like they have anything that's like, that's bullshit. Like, there's nothing that'll look out there on their side. They have really good stuff. Like, Sylvester is a really cool model. Both Hotshot and Sylvester's feet on a guided fired Colossal. Like, yeah. it's fucking dumb. And I don't know if you can do the guided fire with the hotshot. I'd have to relook at the rules. It's been a while since I tried, and I never put it on.
I thought hotshot was dude with the cannon.
Yeah, he is. But and is it battle group? Again, it is battle group?
I think so.
Okay, so then you can't do the guided fire. But, like, the Vulcan has some really, like, key pieces that can just turn that model up to, like, retarded levels.
Yeah.
And, like, I put...
It's frequently speed 8. Unfortunately, it's frequently armor 19.
Yes, and that's the problem with it. And it has one long-range gun that it can reload so it can shoot twice, but the sprays it, then spray 10. And you don't really have any ways to improve the amount of output it does. So once it commits to killing something...
Yeah.
It better kill it pretty good or it will likely die. And that's the faction. They feel like they are literally glass cannon. They do not have the survivability of
Sylvester
a lot of stuff.
Because Sylvester's halberdiers are actually pretty gritty.
Sure. There's exceptions. He's the best caster.
Who's the junkie?
Lucas.
Lucas. I feel like Lucas has been underexplored by practitioners of that faction.
I've tried playing with him, but he is awkward as fuck.
Yes. I think it would take a lot of iterations
to
lock him down. But there was some real power happening with that cast.
There will also be more opportunities to try and unlock him because he's also the Crucible Guard entry with Infernals. So he is the Crucible Guard caster, which was originally really, really terrible until they changed the rule on the Ratch to have that rule where if a model kills a faction model in this model's command range... Awesome. Then you can heal a model.
Now he has a healing mechanic.
Yeah, now he has a healing in theme, which means... But again, the whole healing mechanic with him is really cool and fluffy, but it's also really gimmicky. And it kind of hurts him more than it helps him. Because it's like... He doesn't feel like he gets enough out of it sometimes when you're playing him. Like where Harvey's healing hurting mechanic is really, really effective.
Well, his heal mechanic allows him to play ideally enough turns to find a way to assassinate your opponent's caster.
Yeah. Unless they're spell immune.
Yeah, that gets me. Yeah. He has some weakness.
So, like, again. And Infernals, we'll see, where they had a really interesting... Infernals is weird, because they had the biggest changes over the course of their design, where they went from
People are very excited about them.
I'm curious. I'm looking at them again now that like the CID's over and just looking at stuff to do. But I don't know if they're my playstyle. And after I kind of burned myself on Crucible Guard, I'm not sure if I want to just jump in.
I think they're more my playstyle. I think they look like they're going to be incredibly grindy. And that what you're sort of signing up for is a 7-turn game of out-attritioning your opponent.
That is all my life.
And like... positioning
yeah,
to ensure
like
in 2 turn
right,
slime
right
you
up your wheelhouse.
It might be, and I'm just looking at it. It's just not the normal way I play an attrition game.
Yeah.
Because, but it's weird because I found other ways I liked playing the game, and we've really gone off topic.
Yeah. I feel like it might actually suit how you previously, potentially, it could suit your playstyle, because that's how trolls have played in the past.
Well, it was. But they don't... I rely on armor a lot. They are not an armor faction. Rely mostly on defense and positioning, it looks like.
Yeah, and...
Because, like, you look at... They do not have boxes.
They have a quantity of models, and so they have a lot
You can
of boxes
bring
at
more models on, and I'm... And because
how that mechanic works will really determine whether or not that faction is...
Well, I think they've solved it. And the current way that mechanic works is... You spend the essence cost of the heavy or lighter lesser,
yeah.
And then you sacrifice a marked soul within 12 inches, because it's in their command range and they're all command 12. So you sacrifice a model within 12 inches of your warlock or whatever they're called, their master, and then that model becomes whatever model you summon. But then it only has one essence point on it, and... It's otherwise fully functional, but it can't make attack actions at activation.
Right.
And that's...
So that's quite enough from the CID.
So what they wanted at the beginning...
Yeah.
At the beginning, it was a lot of players that weren't in the Sydney meta, from my experience, were claiming that there was too much models that were too impactful on their once they were brought on the table. So you were summoning heavies, and then heavies were like... So you'd have Agathon.
It was too push, like the weak
like
one.
Like six
was too
push. Yeah, but the current iteration, you're wondering if you can get enough value out of bringing a model on the table that doesn't actually activate. It is. And that's why they've in turn brought up a lot of the abilities. So, like, for example, the melee heavy now has counter charge, and all of them were brought up in armor.
Okay.
So they are all now 11, 18 instead of 11, 17. They're all still really low boxes, and they are... and they all kind of got a little bit of extra rules that they didn't have before. So, like, the ranged heavy now has... If you bring it onto the table, wherever it gets placed is then a 4-inch AoE is placed over it, which causes, like, causes one damage to all models underneath. Okay. So the way you do that,
so
you can run...
a 1-inch melee single wood infantry.
Yeah, but, it, I mean, you can also run a guy nearby a bunch of enemy models. Then your caster walks up, summons that Desolator heavy there, and then suddenly all of those models take a damage.
Mm.
So
I feel like you might actually run out of marked target models.
Yeah, so the marked targets are now all of pretty much all of, like, the super solos and the wretches.
Yeah.
So the wretches are your early sacrifice models.
That's like,
and
they're all the choir pain giver guys.
Yeah,
right?
They're like 4 points, 3 FA, and they're the ones that also do the healing mechanic.
Sure.
But no, you're thinking the choir guys are the cultists.
Oh, okay.
And the cultists used to be marked targets, but that made it too easy. Sure. Marked souls. So now it's like it's only solos, except for the UA of the cultist band. He is also a marked soul.
Right, yeah.
I believe, if I remember correctly. So, yes. So you're not... They don't want you to be doing it every turn. But if you do it, you have to make sure you're going to get value out of that heavy before... And not just let it die.
That seems less egregious.
Yes. Than the original iteration, yeah. It felt pretty... Like, I was playing that game, and the amount of models that were just being created every turn, and the amount of speed I could actually kill them... The only reason I actually managed to win the game against Agathon is that Agathon is a 15-14 or a 14-15.
Mm.
And so he just died.
Mm.
But, I mean, if you get good at playing that caster, he's got teleport and other rules.
Yeah, you're not
he might not
kills.
Die. And he has an 18-inch control range, right?
Yeah.
That's quite a
and he's he's changed a lot as well, as has Zadaroth, while Omidamus hasn't changed almost at all. So he now has, like, censure.
People are... I have reliable people that are good at the game saying they're pretty good, so...
Which is the 18-inch purification that, like, you can say, no, I'll take D3 damage instead of losing my upkeeps.
Well, it's Morvana 2-1.
Yeah.
Okay.
But at the same time, if you kill models in his command range, he can cast spells for free. So he goes, censure.
Okay.
So it can't be soulless models. It has to be non-soulless models. So it has to be solos and cultists. So if you kill solos and cultists in his control range, he can go...
Only if I kill them.
Yeah.
So he's sacking them to create guys. So he doesn't get, like, a free spell out.
Right.
Okay.
So, but it means, like, if you really have upkeeps he wants, he can just spam censure as you attrition his army.
Yeah.
Which could kill your caster, because they take D3 damage for every spell they don't give up.
Yeah.
Which is no one's going to do that, but it does change the way people have to interact, because people will rely on upkeeps to do attrition, and they will just instantly lose it as soon as they start killing models.
It becomes like a bad purification at that point in time, as opposed to the Morvana 2 iteration, which isn't a purification at all.
He has a bunch of other rules, too. Like, he has Tether and Hellmouth, apparently.
Oh, hello. That's a spell.
And he's, like, a Fury 9 caster.
What's a Tether?
Tether is Leash from Veil 1.
Yeah.
So if he moves, then a heavy gets to move directly towards him 3 inches or something like that. And he has teleport so that he can teleport away. Or teleport somewhere else and then make the tether move in a weirder angle.
Sure.
The structure's changed a lot too. So that if you summon a model while within its command range, then the summon cost is one less.
I have to go.
Okay. Bye, Tom.
Farewell.
Bye.
Then the summon cost is one less. You can also spend souls on it to place models 2 inches, so you have a slipstream nearby of that model as well. It also has a gun that's not important. I think it also has a reroll mechanic, or they moved that to another model in the faction. They moved a lot of model rules around as well, trying to balance it. So, like, you remember how there was the horse guy and he had the long shadows?
It was
the rough seas that Rahera had, but yeah, as a rule,
yep,
instead of as a spell. And then they reduced it to 3 inches, and then they moved it to Zadaroth, whose command is 12. So
right,
all models within her 12-inch right command range is on are the solo. Minus so three.
It was on the solo, now it's on the... of Rahera is now on a solo.
No, no, it was on a solo, is now on the Warlock.
Oh, now the Warlock.
Now it's on the Book Girl.
Okay.
Who's also really interesting, because she has, like, Black Spot and Distraction, and her speed, and her feat is, like, plus three defense, and if you miss the target, it teleports 3 inches.
It's good with the snack.
Oh, the Soul Hunter?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that model's like 14, 16 or something for a heavy.
13, 15, maybe?
That's pretty bad.
It's got 7.
No, it's 16 now.
16, most.
Yeah,
13,
it's armor
16.
16. But now then it goes to 16,
has stealth,
16.
Right?
I think so.
Is it? I think it's actually got defensive values or defensive tech against range. I think it has native stealth.
Okay. I haven't played it on the table, but now I kind of want to, but now I got to practice for lock mode, so don't really have time.
Future problem.
Yeah. But I'll be there, so the temptation will be real.
Mm.
And I've seen some of the models they've been putting out, like Omodemos is... Have you seen that model?
Is that the dude, the flail?
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks pretty.
He is, like, the biggest huge base, like, large base model they've ever made. He's, like, half the size of a Colossal by himself.
He was challenging an Earthbreaker and looked really weird next to him.
I'm excited. They look interesting, but again, I'm wondering... He's also got, like, an interesting spell because he's got a armor buff that isn't affected by Blessed because it gives Unyielding, which is...
That's always a nice rule.
And it's not a upkeep, so it's really hard to knock off.
Yeah.
And he casts it for free under his feet, but that puts him in the... rare group of casters who suddenly get fucked by anything that stops you from casting spells. Because there's a few casters who just go, you can't cast spells in X control range, which means if you feat, they cast a spell without paying the cost.
Like a bestial cast?
Wailing, the Inditer. You can't feat in the Inditer's command range or whatever it is.
It's 5 inches of it, though.
The Inditer, I think, has gone up to 8.
Oh. Hello.
I think.
Forever Men Off Bots. So we should probably nerf that faction. And that's probably a good idea, isn't it?
I don't believe PP listens to us. Do you?
No, but I hope someone nerfs that faction.
Fuck you. Warjax, Inditer. Because someone got called out on, I think, reading somewhere. 6 inches, not 8. So it's not 5, but it's not...
Sure.
So it means you have to be really careful when you place models like that.
Mm.
It's pretty rare off, but occasionally you're just like, ah, that's an awkward situation. Because Makeda 3 has the same thing where she wants to cast Insight for free on her feet. So Cromac 1...
Yeah, that hurts her more because she actually has to get kind of forward to make that happen.
I mean, he has Synergy, so that's a pretty good spell too. He was really popular during the CID, but it sounds like post-CID he's now been pushed down to second or third of the Masters. Where I think Zadaroth is now number one, and Agathon and him are like...
It's probably important, the one that doesn't have all the essence. I don't think you want the one that has all the essence to be the most powerful one.
Well, he was at the beginning of the summoning.
Yes, because of how summoning works.
And now I think it's Zadaroth who was the worst at the beginning, but now her spell list is, like, fucking retarded.
The faction would be in a good place if you're actually incentivized to take casters to... and cast spells with them, as opposed to just spamming.
Well, his Agathon's entire, like, game plan changed throughout the CID, and so now his feat is X rule that I can't remember, and then all spellcasting gets signs importance, essentially.
Okay.
And he's a Fury 9 cast, like, Focus 9 caster that can get souls. That converts into Focus.
Mm.
They all can get souls somehow. So for Omodemos, his battle group just provides him souls for all the models they kill.
Oh, that's generous.
Yeah, it's called Hellhounds or something. If they kill models, they send the souls to him. Zadaroth, I think, has a spell that when she kills models, they get souls, that kind of stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, they look interesting. I think we were supposed to talk about the theme force specifically designed to fight against them, which was Flames in the Darkness. Do you have any thoughts on that one, Affy, other than Constance, which we already talked about?
Constance is play from a mercenary perspective. I think it's really interesting that I get to play with Jax like a Victor. I'm looking forward to that. I think that's pretty cool.
You can borrow mine.
I shall be. I can guarantee you that. I'm just like looking forward to playing with those Jax in general. I'm interested in putting a Centurion on the table. I think a Centurion is quite a good Jack. It's probably not good enough, but it is quite good.
I want to try Zarkova with Constance's Jack.
Gallant.
With the Guardian. Or whatever it's called. Watchdog or Watcher.
Yeah, sure.
Because that seems pretty dumb.
What else? Actually a Talent works nicely with that. Because it's stationary.
As long as it's a Warjack going in.
Yep.
I just thought.
Any type of attack that you get to make, or is it just melee?
I believe it's melee, but I'd have to double check. I've never played Zarkova 1.
If you're allowed to use the Guardian Beast-like ability to make a range attack, you could use a Buccaneer as well, who is knocked down. Thinking about status effects that exist on mercenary Jacks,
or any Jack.
Any Jack, but in that theme force, you're allowed to take Merc Jacks, right?
And Cato Jacks and Signar Jacks.
Some number of them.
Two.
Yeah. It's unlimited mercs.
Or it might be three Jacks and two units, or two units and three Jacks or something.
Or maybe I'm getting my theme forces mixed up.
No, this is Blaze in the Darkness. You can take some number of units and some number of Jacks, I think. Okay. Or it might just be now just some number of Jacks. It's been a while since I looked at it.
It changed a lot. I got really confused.
Oblivion and the Infernals had like so many changes.
Yeah.
Like Rahera was the first model we kind of really saw that did that, which just changed like considerably every week.
And also the Duelist Jack as well.
Scallywag.
Swashbuckler changed a lot.
Sure. But then we saw in the CIDs following it, the same thing happened quite a lot.
It's not a great sign, really, to see like really dumb editions of models come out that really don't need to be.
We had seen before, but not to the extent. Mm. And we have seen PP lose some of its design staff. Which means they probably had less concrete ideas going in than they had in the past, which isn't necessarily a good sign, but it's also probably what CID is really good at kind of solving.
Yeah, fair. It's probably more important now. I feel like the only...
And I think that's something that will improve again over time as PP like, gets its feet back under its... And do itself again.
I can't actually think of a model that is literally broken that has come out in like the last 2 years or so.
We've seen really strong things. I think
like Lord of the Feast isn't broken. You just need to play around him.
He's extreme, but he's not. The game is over.
No, it's not hard to play around him either.
Yeah, but if it's so punishing. It's such a punishing model.
Sure. Sure.
Like, more than most in the game.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
If you fuck up accidentally, like, absolutely. Not thinking... Like, you cannot have a mindless game. Like, you can't have a for-fun game against Lord of the Feast. Because he'll just end it. I was like, I'm going to try this new list. Oh, shit. Game is over. I accidentally put this model here, and now, like, my army is dead.
OJC, I looked at my objective. I'm like... I wonder if I'm supposed to kill my own objective this turn. I don't think I can, but
This feels like one of those models where PP redesigns an objective because of how dumb it is. Like, you know how like the objective is like, you can't pray these anymore, you can't do this anymore because it was just abusive bullshit.
Mm.
Lord of the Feast, if his rule was like slightly more specific... It might, like, I could see them just changing the objective, just to be like, this is dumb. But I feel like it'd be really hard with something as, if you hit this model, you can place
in face to face. You wouldn't write on the objective, you'd write it on his own card.
Yeah, you'd have to. Except nothing in the game references scenario rules. They did it once in a
rule books do. And the scenario.
Sure, but no model references.
No.
Which is something I always thought was weird because they tried it out during a league where the models in the league gained rules that actually affected scenario. So I thought that was a sign, like, maybe because the game was becoming more and more focused to a competitive format that we'd be seeing that in future rules, but it never came back. So I, up until this point, we've never seen a model actually reference scenario zones, have never referenced actual scenario things, like flags, objectives, and scenario zones. So I don't think you'll see it written on his card.
That's fine. My position is Lord of the Feast doesn't have to change at all. I don't think there's a problem with that model. I think it's fine.
You are a rare exception, sir. Even other Circle players are willing to accept that he's going to get changed to some degree.
It probably will, but I think it's important to have challenges inside of the game that you have to position around.
Sure, but
Lord of the Feast is going to be one of them. I think it's fine.
Sure, but the problem is
it's easier than double stones in back of the day. Like that
I agree, but they were trying to get rid of shit like that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they are.
And I think you can fix him by just making it so that there are things that counterplay into him, where right now it's really hard to even get basic counterplay. Because like things like Shield Guard should be like effective, where current Shield Guard just means, no, you just can't have him necessarily in the back arc or something, because you can still hit whatever model he originally attacked,
well,
because of how
I guess the
easiest, base and reach rules were.
Sure, the easiest way to do that is to say that he has to place at a location that is like nearest to him and still base to base with the model that he's targeting.
Sure, so he has to be placed in a direct line.
Behind, yeah, he can't teleport behind a model. It has to be immediately at that specific location. That gets around all that weird, awkward bullshit that happens.
It also makes it a lot more easy to play. Like, that's more easy to play around than having a shield guard.
Yes. Yes.
Like, that means you put a model where he needs to land according to that rule.
Well,
it
means you can also just block line of sight to your caster with models, and he shoots the models in front and is placed, but can't draw line of sight to your model because he has to.
Oh, no, he kills a model, then he threshers.
maybe I'm not explaining this clearly.
Sure, you put models farther in front than just.
And right because they can't teleport to the back of the model,
it
has to be the nearest location.
We could literally.
But that's like such a nerf to the model as well.
Well, I think that's why one inch reach is a better nerf. That's literally all I'd change. Is just, then he can't hit a model that he was targeting if a model 3 inches away shield guarded it.
I like that.
I think that's what most people are after at this point.
Yeah, sure.
Because it is a really cool model with a really cool interaction that brings a really cool question to the game. The problem is it's so weird and different, and it's so powerful that it's really hard to play against, where a simple shield guard should be a convenient answer to something like that.
The other thing you can do is take Grievous off his card.
Sure. I still had him kill McKay.
It doesn't stop Warcaster assassinations.
If I had a shield guard, I could have.
Sure. It stops the grind play.
I often don't see that's how he's used. He usually is used as like an extreme scalpel. Or he kills my caster.
Yeah, for sure.
And I find the best players with him are the ones who hold him.
That's the kind of play that I would encourage.
What?
The extreme scalpel or kill the caster.
Yeah, but that's fine. But I also want to be able to play around it to a degree. Like, he affects. Well, I don't really want to get into this conversation because I've had it with Arian about a billion times and other people. And everybody, I'm sure, has heard
literal
about Lord of the
Feast.
Yep. He's been on once before. Can't remember what we talked about. I think we talked about something. I don't remember. Yeah, let's wrap it up. We talked about Flame of the Darkness. Like, anything else? Nothing?
No, not really.
Okay.
Osram needs some buffs. He's been nerfed enough. It's time to wind that back and give us the range 12, power 12, banish on hit model.
I really liked that model.
I think it's an excellent model, and I think the game will enjoy playing with Mercenary Lord of the Feast.
I really liked that model before they nerfed it. And then it became like, what's the point anymore?
Yeah.
With Ostrom, it probably wasn't okay, but he was...
People say that, but I mean...
But I mean, if Ostrom
like
wasn't
Shield
okay...
Guard. Just like Shield Guard. I mean, you're already taking two to play into Lord of the Feast. So you're pre-teched for the model.
You're right.
You're not even paying points at that point in time, because you paid it for paid the points for a different matchup.
Okay. And there you have it. Ostrom apologist Affy signing out with myself, Brian, who apparently can't steer this ship once Chris leaves. Because fuck did that get rambly. Holy shit. We are on topic, in line, just smashing this out. As soon as Chris leaves, it's just like me, Tom, and Affy just go, what? What's a topic anymore? All right, folks. Good night.
Farewell.